Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann Show. Please be sure to tune in Sunday nights from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, to discuss current events, news, and political opinion with Lucid Libertarian flair. Be prepared, folks. We often go into an optional extended third hour. This show advocates for liberty, freedom, our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and limited government, while speaking against corporate and government corruption, tyranny, and the globalist Great Reset agenda that undermines our precious American sovereignty. Discussions here are unscripted and free-flowing, so sometimes conversations wander off in unpredictable directions. Would you like to call in and share your thoughts and be part of the conversation? The number is 563-999-3698. Again, that is 563-999-3698. Then press number 1 and you'll be added to the queue. Please also like and follow my Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann page on Facebook. You can help me battle their freedom-loathing censorship by visiting my page regularly, along with reacting, commenting, and sharing my posts. Thank you so much for listening, but please sit tight and don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a few minutes to kick off the show.
Imagine waking up in a trunk. What is grooming? What if I told you we had a 40% increase of human and sex trafficking in our country due to COVID lockdowns? We already had high numbers to begin with. One's Purpose is an amazing organization pounding the pavement every day, helping these survivors get help. Unfortunately, they do not have the funding they need for a safe house. In the state of Oregon, we have zero safe houses for these survivors who have endured the most heinous of crimes. The time is now to get involved. The time is now to help stop human trafficking. Please go to onespurpose.com to get involved. If you need help and if you know someone who needs to get help, please contact 541-221-3448. Make a donation. Make a difference.
NWCR Radio has been on the air since 2006 and with Conservative Nation Media since 2013. Now, NWCR continues as the owner of CNM with the news that the lamestream lying liberal media chooses not to tell you because the truth has nothing to do with the agenda that they are all pushing. We will tell the truth no matter what the liberal left has to say about it or what the truth is. Being banned off of YouTube for telling the truth with my updates and off of Facebook several times, we have our badges of honor that we keep pushing the envelope for on our show. My co-host, Lucid Libertarian Lori Ann, and I, along with my band of callers, have great shows with great information for America on each episode. We are NWCR Radio, Friday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio through Conservative Nation Media, where America always wins.
In my
the heart. Once upon a time there was light in my life, but now there's only love in the dark. Nothing I can say, a total eclipse of the heart. A total eclipse of the heart. Turn around bright eyes. Turn around bright eyes.
Well, hello, hello, all of you liberty and freedom-loving folks out there. Here we are for another episode of Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann. And, of course, I had to have a couple of songs that are eclipse-related since we are on the eve of the total solar eclipse. So the first song I played was Soundgarden, Black Hole Sun. And then, of course, it would not be complete without playing Bonnie Tyler, Total Eclipse of the Heart. I think that's probably going to be the number one song played tomorrow, I'm sure, as the eclipse rolls through Texas and goes all the way through the states and I think ends, what, in Maine or something? I have to look at the maps again. But, you know, so it's not going to be visible where I'm at. At least not very much, like maybe a sliver here in Oregon, but that's okay because I saw the one in 2017. I was fortunate enough where I lived for the total eclipse in 2017. That was in August. My house is right dead center in totality, so I didn't have to go anywhere. I didn't have to fight any traffic. I didn't have to do anything other than just step outside, set up a couple of chairs out on the other side of the street so that I would have good viewing away from the tree line and stuff. And my mom was with me. She was staying with me at the time. And so she and I both got to experience a total solar eclipse for the first time in our lives and probably the only time in our lives. And so that was kind of a special moment. And it's really kind of cool. You know, there's some people, you know, Facebook friends and, you know, a couple of high school friends in other areas where they're going to be in the path of totality. And, you know, and I'm just like, yeah, you got to see it. You know, you just have to see it because, you know, if you're fortunate enough to do it, it is such a surreal and interesting feeling. It's, you know, it doesn't go completely dark. It's like this really weird color to the sky, kind of like dusk, but different. And I remember, you know, most everything went silent. You know, most of the birds went silent. You could see the stars, you know, several stars showing through. And, you know, unfortunately, like, you know, cameras and photos, you know, unless you have, like, really good filters or a really good camera, it doesn't really depict what it really looked like. And just so that you guys know, don't look directly at it until the moon has fully covered the sun. Then you can look at it when it's fully blocked. So during that, however long it's going to be wherever you're at, you know, I think some areas it's going to be like 2.5 minutes, some areas 3 or 3.5. So during that time when the sun is fully covered, then you can look at it and not like burn your eyeballs out or anything. But leading up to it, it's pretty cool. You can, you know, a lot of times I was using my camera to try and view it. Things like that. So definitely get your eclipse glasses, you know, good ones. You know, there's a lot of cheapy ones out there that are just bogus. You need to get actually decent rated ones for viewing the eclipse, leading up to totality and then afterwards as it moves out. So definitely get that if you're out there. And be safe, everybody. You know, there's so much hysteria going on about this eclipse and all kinds of craziness going on. I'm going to give the rundown. I do have a clip that I do want to play. Really graceful. She hasn't been doing very many videos, but she did put one out regarding the eclipse, and so I do intend to play that before I start bringing people into the conversation and things. We've got Boyd the Alaskan in the switchboard. Cinnamon's kicking back listening. I've got a Skype caller. We've got Jim Clark. He hosts the Novelty Vent and Chat Late Nights show here on Blog Talk. He's in the chat room. We got Joe Gibson in the chat room. We got Mike and Boyd also in the chat room. So we're getting people rolling on in. After Blog Talk obviously had issues this week, it went down on Tuesday. And so nobody was able to start their shows. And then that went on. And then Friday morning, I got an email saying, hey, the issues are resolved. And that was a lie, because people were still having issues. It was only allowing like 2, maybe 3 live shows to go on, and then everybody else was SOL. And so Conservative Nation Media, where I co-host with Robert, we weren't able to get the show started despite trying. I even tried to do an on-the-fly show to see if I could get my show working. Then finally yesterday, it came back up and running. So Donnie's show, Beyond the Mainstream, went on without any problems, so that gave me some hope for tonight. And Jim Clark is saying it's the end of the world. Yes, everybody's freaking out about this eclipse, and it's so weird because there's so many different places that are declaring states of emergency. And yes, this happened in 2017, but like the media is all over it this time. It's just like it's everywhere. You know, prepare, get your water, make sure you have enough food to last a week, make sure you have all your, you know, pet food and everything that you need and your medications. And you know, and then there's, you know, Texas and Indiana, Ohio, New York have issued states of emergency. And it's hysteria is just insane. And then somebody got the brilliant idea at NASA to fire 3 rockets at the eclipse. They're going to set one off shortly before, I think like 15 or 20 minutes before the eclipse, and then they're going to do another one during the eclipse and another one after. So somebody got that bright idea. And then CERN will be firing up again as well. CERN is, you know, they're hoping to, you know, discover the mysteries of the universe by firing it up and seeing what kind of cool cosmic energy they might be able to unleash during this eclipse. And then to top it off, we have the Devil Comet. So apparently you'll be able to, if you're in the place of totality, it should get dark enough so you should be able to see the Devil Comet as well. And so, of course, on Facebook, you know, I was already kind of thinking it, but of course on Facebook I saw, you know, some memes going around showing memes from the movie Night of the Comet. And if you've never seen Night of the Comet, it's kind of one of those classic, you know, B-rated movies at the time. But it's definitely a classic. It's one of my favorites, actually. It's sort of like a zombie movie in a way. But the premise is it's Night of the Comet, and there's this big, you know, once-in-a-lifetime comet comes by, kills everybody off, turns them into red dust, unless you were fortunate enough to be sleeping in some sort of steel place. You know, if anything made of steel, surrounded by steel, then you were blocked from it. And so, you know, there were very few survivors. And so I couldn't help but be reminded of that, like this Devil Comet and then the eclipse and all this stuff. And it's just like, so hopefully by tomorrow night, we will discover that no, every human being did not just suddenly turn into red dust. Although it could be argued that we already have a lot of zombies walking around maybe the existing zombies, maybe they'll get worse. I don't know. But definitely some of the zombies in politics and also in this country are in need of some brains. So there's that as well. So I guess we'll see. Hopefully everybody stays safe tomorrow. I don't expect a whole lot to happen, but if something does happen, everything is going to be blamed on the eclipse. You know, if we have a sudden like EMT or sudden power outages or craziness, or maybe even another cargo ship ramming into another bridge, I'm sure that it'll be the eclipse that's blamed for it. Let's see. Then, before I get into that, really graceful talking about the eclipse, get into some other news as well. We've had earthquakes in New Jersey. It was centered in New Jersey, but of course felt, you know, in New York and up and down the coastline. The first one that hit was a 4.8. I believe that was on Friday, right? So the first one that hit was 4.8, and then there was a 4.0 aftershock. So that freaked everybody out because, of course, earthquakes are not very common there on the East Coast in New Jersey, New York area. They do happen, but when they do, it freaks everybody out, of course. Everything shake, rattled, and rolled. Nobody died. I don't think anybody was really injured. I don't think it caused a lot of damage. Maybe some cracks in some concrete or something. But yeah, so we have earthquakes. So it's like, you know, like the end of the world. The apocalypse is coming because we got, you know, the devil comet, and we got the eclipse, and we got earthquakes. And we can't forget to mention the earthquake in Taiwan as well. That one was pretty devastating. That one was huge. Let me look that back up again. The Taiwan earthquake. I want to see what the latest is on there. Over 600 people remain stranded after the Taiwan earthquake. I think there has been about a dozen deaths. And let's see, rescuers in Taiwan are faced the threat of further landslides and rockfalls in Friday's search for a dozen people still missing from this week's earthquake. As the death toll rose to 12, while some of those stranded were brought to safety, it happened on Wednesday. It was a magnitude 7.2, and it rocked a lot of it. About 50 aftershocks were felt overnight afterwards. So it's pretty crazy, and then there's been a lot of rain and stuff causing landslides, buildings kind of leaning to the side, seeing some of the photos, it's really pretty crazy. So you got, you know, this significant 7.2 earthquake on the other side of the earth happening just before the one in New Jersey. Let's see, so that's some crazy news going on as well. Then, of course, in the latest, speaking of rebuilding the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, Biden, of course, is declaring that the federal government is going to pay for rebuilding the bridge. $60 million has been promised so far, but of course, you know, that's going to go up. So everybody is going to foot the bill. I'm sure that the insurance companies are just grinning from ear to ear with this news. So what happened to insurance companies? What happened to, you know, the insurance companies get involved, and isn't there an investigation? Don't insurance companies do pretty in-depth investigations in order to appraise and actually pay out as a result? So is there something going on there? You know, I'm sure a lot of us conspiracy-minded people kind of question this, going, why is the federal government on the taxpayer dime going to be rebuilding this instead of Baltimore and the insurance companies, why can't they work all that out? Are they trying to cover something up? I don't know, folks, but it's pretty interesting. And like I said, $60 million is just the start. And Biden has to go through Congress in order to approve more, which I'm sure, you know, you're going to look like such a bad person if you don't, you know, if you vote against funding it, right? You know, so what politician is going to want to, like, look bad by saying, no, we're not going to give any more money toward this? Then, let's see, our government at work. 200,000 deportation cases are dismissed because the DHS failed to file the proper paperwork. Something tells me that was deliberate. I don't know why. I don't think that was just, you know, oh, oops, we made a mistake. Sorry, but, you know, we dismissed 200,000 deportation cases because we accidentally failed to file the proper paperwork, right? So we can get into that later if we want. I can bring that story up when we get into detail if you're interested in talking about that further. Additionally, more of our government at work. The federal government reports, the federal oversight, one of the oversight committees or whatever, a report says that $2.7 trillion in improper payments have been made over two decades. So we're talking fraud, we're talking over-bloated, you know, payouts for things. We can get into that as well. I can pull up the article and we can get into detail. But over two decades, $2.7 trillion just tossed into the garbage. And this is in addition to, remember, there's like over $2 trillion now that our Department of Defense can't account for either. They failed audits six times in a row, and it's estimated to be around $2 trillion there as well. We're just throwing away trillions of dollars now, like it doesn't matter. You know, that's not, you know, going to hurt the economy or anything. We're not going to, you know, there's not going to be any consequences for that, right? But, you know, hey, according to Biden, you know, everything's going great, right? The economy's doing wonderful. Ooh. Let's see. Then in another article I saw, District of Columbia police dealt thousands of guns. And the ATF is demanding answers after many of those guns are found at crime scenes. We can get into that if we want to. Here's one that I'm definitely in favor of. An Ohio congressman is introducing a bill to repeal the 16th Amendment. And if you don't remember what the 16th Amendment is, that is the amendment allowing for the income tax. I am all for repealing that. And on that note, I have been in conversation with Dave Champion, a.k.a. Dr. Reality, and he might be joining us next week, you know, a week from today. He might be joining us again to talk about the income tax and other stuff. So I'm pretty sure he hasn't confirmed quite yet, but it sounds like he might be, he's probably available. I sent him my usual invite, and we've been in communication with each other. So I'm hoping it sounds like I will have him on as my guest next, especially because I thought it would be good timing since next week will be the 14th and April 15th, tax day, is on Monday. So I thought that would be great timing to have him on the show if he's available. So stay tuned for that. Of course, I will shout it out to the world once he confirms, and if I know, when I know for sure, and I'll definitely get the show set up and promote it. Let's see. Then I have a couple of other shorter clips on this topic. Your new car is spying on you. It was pretty interesting. I saw a report on a, you know, like one of those news investigations talking about these new cars with, you know, the built-in GPS and all that stuff, and how that data is being sent to insurance companies and other places pretty freely, And so that's kind of scary. So your new car is spying on you, which makes me go, okay, yeah, I'm hanging on to my 1999 4Runner as long as I possibly can, because it doesn't have all that crap built into it to track me everywhere I go. So that one I do, like I said, I have a couple of clips. They're both like, you know, 3 or 4 minutes each that I want to play later in the show as well to discuss that topic. Then I also saw, like, here's, you know, Biden economy being so great again. Six-figure incomes are needed in nearly half the states in this country in order to afford a home. So if you want to buy a home these days, more than half the states, you're going to need a six-figure income. You're going to be having to earn $100,000 a year or more in order to actually be able to afford houses at these housing prices now. Absolute insanity. And then Oregon, finally, Oregon, unleashed its new unemployment system last month. The unemployment system, I don't know if you guys remember, I remember talking about it way back when COVID hit and everybody was getting laid off. Oregon's unemployment system was like decades old. I mean, super, super old and very much in need of being upgraded. Oregon had some federal funding to update it, but they never did. They just sat on the money. And then, so during COVID, with everybody getting laid off, I mean, people were waiting months to even see a dime on unemployment. And so now they finally rolled out this new system. And now we have people that are, again, waiting weeks and weeks in order to get funds. So way to go, Oregon. You know, didn't try it at all. So plenty more to discuss as well. I do see a couple people raising their hand. I do think that it looks like Mike's raising his hand there in the queue. Good to see you, Mike. And so, but before I bring everybody on, I'm going to play this really graceful clip talking about the eclipse and her, and you got to find her on YouTube, but she also does Rumble. I like to direct people to Rumble to follow her there, because sometimes she'll do a video or something that she knows will be censored on YouTube. And so I just tend to follow her on Rumble. So this is her clip that, you know, she just did about 4 days ago, April 3rd. The April 2024 eclipse is getting really weird. So here we go. I'm going to kick off this, and then once we're back, I'll start bringing people on in, and we can have more discussion. So here we go.
Hey, Internet friends. What's going on with this total solar eclipse set to darken our skies on April the 8th? Several states have declared a state of emergency preemptively out of an abundance of caution. Meanwhile, NASA has announced they plan to launch 3 rockets 260 miles above the Earth during the eclipse. And CERN, or the European Organization for Nuclear Research, decided it would be a good time to fire up the world's largest and most powerful particle accelerator on April 8th. Why on April 8th is CERN doing this? Well, they say it's to search for invisible particles secretly powering our universe. Lay off, okay? That's all. Today we're going to talk about all the crazy stuff happening on April 8th. We're going to dive into the significance of eclipses across the spiritual and occult worlds, dating back to ancient civilizations. We'll also talk about major historical events coinciding with eclipses. So let's begin. In the occult world, esoterica, and some schools of hermeticism, eclipses represent powerful celestial body alignments, acting as portals to spiritual worlds. And with the ability to harness that energy for such a short duration as our world is cast into shadow, eclipses are seen as an opportunity for karmic cleansing, manifestation, and ceremonial acts performed both on an individual level and even mass consortium, or like a cabal, you know, a cabal to bring out whatever intention. If I had to guess, English occultist Aleister Crowley and his followers would be performing some sort of sex magic ceremony during the eclipse, some kind of freaky deaky thing. And they wouldn't miss it for the world. It just so happens that Aleister Crowley began writing the Book of the Law on April 8th, which he claimed Iwas allegedly dictated to him, a voice he encountered on his honeymoon in Cairo, Egypt. He went to Exhibit 666 in Cairo's museum to write down his book of occult magic philosophy, which kind of ended up invigorating the lost traditions of magic in the West, especially amongst the upper echelon. Side note, imagine being on your honeymoon and your new husband decides to squirrel himself away to channel an Egyptian god demon and get out the typewriter. Talk about needing a margarita. Big time. Anyway, the general idea is that eclipses are associated with themes of transition, rebirth, and the passage of time, or the beginning of an era. Astrologically speaking, eclipses are seen as times of transition and epiphany. They showcase the interconnectivity of the universe, its cycle, and its rhythm. In Native American belief, which varies greatly from one tribe to the next, eclipses were often viewed as times of chaos and disturbance, when the world's normal order was suddenly thrown out of whack. During these eclipses, I'm sure they observed the circadian rhythm of nature being disturbed, especially in nocturnal animals coming out while there was an eclipse and birds going to sleep, that sort of thing. Much like in Chinese culture, some Native American beliefs centered around the eclipse as birds or dragons from the heavens eating the sun or the moon, representing the endless battle between light and dark. Curiously, there's some continuity spanning across cultures and time. These ceremonies performed during eclipses to ensure a positive outcome, a return to natural order, and for light to defeat the darkness. Of course, the New Testament describes the darkness during Jesus' crucifixion, which some historians believe was an eclipse. Several important events throughout history have happened at the same time as these eclipses, like the death of Julius Caesar or the signing of the Treaty of Versailles in 1919. Or the North American eclipse of 1865, shortly after the end of the American Civil War. The moon casts a shadow on the Earth during a solar eclipse, whereas during a lunar eclipse, the moon is shadowed when the Earth is between the sun and the moon. On April 8, 2024, there will be a total solar eclipse that can be seen all throughout North America. The path of totality, spanning 115 miles from Mexico to Texas to Maine, will see the sun disappear for up to 4 minutes and 28 seconds, making it one of the longest eclipses of the 21st century. But the reason I wanted to make this video is never in my life have I seen so many news alerts and mainstream media fear being spread about an eclipse. I certainly don't remember it with the 2017 eclipse, do you? Residents along the line of totality are being urged to stock up on 1 or 2 weeks of food in advance. Schools are being canceled, presumably because of the onslaught of tourists there to witness the total solar eclipse. There will be a lot of traffic, but New York prisons are also going to be locked down, and several states have issued states of emergency. State emergencies are usually reserved for disasters, wherein the government may be granted additional authority to help ensure public safety and address the major issue. During this time, they can call in extra police, firefighters, FEMA, or even the military to assist. And I'm sure y'all remember during health epidemics, the government uses a state of emergency to isolate and quarantine people. And at this time, it's within the rights of state governments to implement new rules, which we're not going to call laws, to address the issue. Like I said before, NASA has announced they plan to launch 3 rockets 260 miles above the Earth during the eclipse. These rockets are called APEP rockets. It's interesting to note that Apep was the ancient Egyptian god of chaos who embodied darkness and disorder, and was thus the opponent of light and the god of order and truth. NASA aims to gather data on how the sudden dimming of sunlight during an eclipse impacts the ionosphere, causing disturbances that could disrupt communications, it said in a statement. I wonder if that includes solar flares. The rockets will launch at 3 different times, 45 minutes before, during, and 45 minutes after the peak local eclipse. Oh, and I almost forgot. During the eclipse, a horned comet known as the Devil Comet is said to make an appearance. Apparently, this horned comet, this Devil Comet, has just been chilling up there in the sky for most of March, but you'll be able to see it during the solar eclipse, they say. We certainly look forward to that. Furthermore, CERN's stated mission is to uncover what the universe is made of and how it works. If you remember, back in 2016, they did a whole mock ritual human sacrifice at the courtyard of CERN. I'm not making this up. Honestly, the more I talk in this video, the more it just sounds like I'm making stuff up, but I'm not. They did all that back in 2016. Red robes, the whole shebang, okay? Anyway, the Geneva Particle Physics Research Complex, CERN, naturally plans to test the world's most powerful particle accelerator during the April 8th solar eclipse to search for invisible matter that secretly powers the universe. I just imagine while they're firing up this thing, this particle accelerator, they have their low-level employees just doing Gothard tunnel twerking to Lizzo in her memory. Much like CERN, the World Economic Forum, also located in Geneva, their logo also features the 666, because of course it does. But the WEF logo is an eclipse, which is also sort of interesting. If this is your first video on this channel, the WEF is basically like the New World Order plan they publicize every year and brag about in an eat the bugs, live in the pod, own nothing accent, and the Great Reset and all that. You got it. You're up to speed. So some of y'all are asking me what's going to happen during the eclipse. I say probably nothing. While we're all looking that way, what's going on in the other direction? It's got Y2K hype, big time. Bigly. So either nothing or it's just a bunch of occultists under letter agencies summoning demons. They attempt that like every single week, so no big deal. It's either a kickoff point or it's the MO of control by fear or it's nothing and we're just going to wave at the double comment flying by, okay? What do you think? Let me know. I always look forward to reading your comments. Thank you so much for watching, subscribing, and supporting my channel on Patreon and for buying my book, The Deep State Encyclopedia. Bye.
All right, there you have it. That was really graceful. The April 2024 eclipse is getting really weird. Her latest video, and I did put a link to it in the chat room. Follow her channel on Rumble. So if you're in the chat room right now, you can just pull up that link to the video. Definitely subscribe to her on Rumble. She is on YouTube as well. But as I said earlier, sometimes she will put out a video that she knows YouTube will probably censor. And so it's usually better to follow her on Rumble instead. So with that said, I think maybe in the bonus hour I mentioned in the chat room, I did upload one of the latest videos that Dr. Reality, Dave Champion, did. And so I might play that in the bonus hour ahead of anticipating him being a guest next week. I look forward to it. It would be his fourth time coming back. And I know a few of you have asked about when you ever going to have him back on your show. And so, like I said, I thought it would be the perfect time next Sunday because it's the day before tax day. So I'm going to go ahead and we got Mike and we got Boyd raising their hand. So I'm bringing you all in, and I see Cinnamon, I see Robert from Comedia, and Pianchi hanging back listening on the switchboard. Press 1 to raise your hand when you want me to bring you on. So welcome on in, and if you want to call in, you can do so, 563-999-3485. And then press lucky number 1 to raise your hand, and I'll be happy to bring you on in. So Mike. Boyd, what you all got to say? What's the latest? Is there anything that you want to talk about that I mentioned? Or are we just going
to Yeah. Welcome to the Eclipse Eve Sunday night hootenanny.
That's a term I haven't heard for a while. Hootenanny. Why did anybody ever stop saying that anyway? It's such a fun word. Hootenanny.
maybe Hootie and the Blowfish were going to sue.
Maybe. Where did that phrase come from anyway? That's what I want to know. Somebody look that up. Where did Hootenanny come from?
I bet you came out of the Appalachians.
Probably. Ron Reck just showed up into the chat room, so I said hi to him. Hey there, Ron. Feel free to call in if you like. So, yeah, got some stuff to get into.
Ron could probably tell us where Hootenanny came from.
Yeah, that sounds like something that he would know.
if all this stuff, if the eclipse causes all this stuff to happen here on Earth, you know who they're gonna blame it on? Trump. Trump did it. That's right. Trump did it. The eclipse caused the grid to go haywire. Trump did it.
Trump did it. Everything's Trump's fault. Everything. Doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah, Joe Biden.
I can tell you one thing
that I can blame Trump on.
Go ahead.
Joe Biden. I blame Joe
what
Biden on
Joe,
Donald
Joe
Trump.
Biden?
Hmm?
Why?
Well, because we got to blame everything on Trump, and Joe Biden's the best excuse I have to blame on Trump.
Yeah,
because those mean tweets, man. Just couldn't have those mean tweets anymore. So usher in Biden.
I think he should have contested the election a little more in court. But
it's not like he didn't try. Part of why he's being persecuted now.
Trump never tried. It was everybody that was around him that was trying, but Trump never tried.
Right. He was the only one
that could have brought all that evidence into the courtroom and they could not deny standing.
Right. He should have enjoined that lawsuit that Texas brought against Pennsylvania, whatever it was. Because if he enjoined that lawsuit, you know, then they couldn't have denied the standing. Like they keep saying, they go, well, he lost all these cases about election denial. No, he didn't lose them. He never tried, and the ones he did try, they dismissed on standing. He didn't lose them. He never got a chance to contest the cases. So
no,
yeah,
Trump never contested. Period. He was never on any of those lawsuits.
Nope. And then, you know, but other than Trump, you know, everything they say they blame on Trump, blah, 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 yeah, yeah. We got a poor economy because it's Trump's fault. We got this, it's Trump's fault. We got that, it's Trump's fault. We got an invasion, that's Trump's fault, which is a bunch of bullshit. You know, but they're so deep into the TDS, they can't see the forest through the trees. You know, we got these idiot Republicans who are going to try and hand the gavel over to Hakeem Jeffries before the election. All right. You know, we got the Democrats like Adam Schiff, who don't give a shit about all the lies they told, and he's going to try and run for Senate because he can't be in. I believe they either censored him or they did something that he can't go back. If he tried to go back into the House, he couldn't. They wouldn't allow him. The Republicans wouldn't allow him on. They took him off of all his committees and shit. So he's going to go try and go to the Senate in California, which may or may not happen. We got to see. I'm hoping for the best, which would be Steve Daugherty beats the crap out of him and gets that Senate seat, but that's neither here nor there. You know, we got those guys. Everybody hates Trump, and they can't see that he's probably going to win this thing and probably going to win it going away. You know, I'm hoping.
Not to interrupt, but I'm going to go ahead and bring Tian in. He's raising his hand, so I'm going to welcome him into the fold here. Hey, Tian, welcome to the Insanity.
I was on a show tonight, me and Sarge, and it was a black female judge. I think she's on the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania. She's just below it. And she spoke so eloquently on the U.S. Constitution, the state constitution, and she denigrated these black females. That's what she says. Fannie Willis, Letitia James, and all the rest. She said what's going on to Donald Trump is pure racism. Now, I'm going to get a copy of that, me and Sarge, and I told him to make sure that he disseminated it to everyone to let you hear what a judge is about. She said she took an oath to the U.S. Constitution and the state constitution, and that's what it's about. What now we have is politicized. Political, and she really laid into it. Matter of fact, I asked her what she was married, because when I was on the phone with Sarge to make sure he would listen, I said, I'm going to ask this woman, is she married? I'm going to propose to her. Sarge, I am too. So luckily, I got on first, and I asked her what she married. She said, yes. But I told her, there's a guy coming on now behind me named Sarge. Pay no attention to him about this proposing to you. Just tell him to get on to the question. But no, it's refreshing.
Speaking of which, I do have a Skype number raising their hand, so I have a feeling it might be Sarge since he heard his name being put out there. So I'm going to go ahead and bring in Skype number.
No,
we're
going to have an eclipse.
I told you you got to tell the truth. I told you I was going to challenge you to a duel and ask one of them hosts to be my second, and you could add the other one as your second for that woman's hand in marriage. But she married, so that's off the table, so you're lucky. You and me ain't going to fight a duel.
Hey, Gloria Ann.
Man, I'll tell you something. Lori, I swear to God, listen to that woman talk about judicial procedure. The Constitution, the necessity for the fealty to the aspirational traditions of American jurisprudence, all of that was like taking a bath in refreshing fresh water. To hear this woman so perfectly articulate what a judge and a jurist is supposed to be and do, it was just so good to hear. You have no idea.
What show was this on?
You can hear this one.
Any way that somebody can put a link to it in the chat room or something for me? I'm not sure what show it is that you're talking about.
Yeah, I can. I can put a link to it. I got it bookmarked, so I'll put a link to it. But I'm telling you, man, it was just so wonderful to hear this woman actually express her devotion to the rule of law. And you know what? I really could not say with certainty what her political party was. That's how good she was. I believe she's probably conservative, maybe a Republican, but you couldn't be certain. It was clear her primary allegiance was to being a jurist and applying the Constitution and the duly enacted laws of the state legislature and the United States Constitution.
Well, you know,
that was clear
really
from everything she said.
If you're a judge, it shouldn't be political sides. It shouldn't be partisan.
Precisely.
You know, if you're a judge, exactly, that's how it should be. And we do have Daniel and Kathy raising their hand. It looks like Joe Gibson is also raising his hand. But, Boyd, what were you trying to say?
I said you've just heard the perfect example of why they're declaring states of emergency all along the eclipse path. Sarge and Pianki are at each other's throats. That's just fucking crazy.
That should be like a whole federal nationwide state of emergency then.
But look what impelled us, in the words of Thomas Jefferson, look what impelled us to the separation. A woman with an impeccable mind.
She was like a rare jewel.
Listening to her was like finding a rare jewel.
Okay, so who's trying to speak? I think it was Daniel or Kathy trying to speak because I just brought them on and Joe Gibson on as well. Who was it that was trying to talk?
Hello.
That was me. And I said, he was talking about this judge and I said, unlike Ketanji Brown Jackson, who doesn't know what a woman is.
Well, I want to know what's going to happen to him with this eclipse. I mean, everybody's worried. I mean, you said that, you know, be on alert. But what are we going to be on alert for? What do you think's going to happen? I mean, what's the opinions here?
Armageddon in the streets. I don't know. I mean, really, we don't know what's going to happen. I mean,
what do you think?
Firing three rockets and turning CERN on. Who knows? I mean, that's the experiment, isn't it? I mean, that's why they're doing it. They want to find out if or what will happen if they fire three rockets during the eclipse into the atmosphere or whatever, and then also turn CERN on at the same time. So maybe we don't know. Maybe they have absolutely no idea.
Well,
what
would be the
purpose?
Well, let me ask you this. If they fire three rockets into the atmosphere, what would be the purpose of that? What would be the end? I mean, what could they achieve, really?
Who knows?
Well, it'd be like,
we have to ask
NASA. It'd be like, hey, Joe?
Yes.
It'd be like the rockets they fire off up here into the aurora borealis to study.
The reason why I ask is any analyst or any military objective or analyst or planner has to, you know, you have to have, you know, there's cycles and there's plans. You have an objective. You have, you know, the outcome. You have an end game goal. You have, you know, there, nobody just does it for the hell of it. You know, not these New World Order people. They are very well thought out and they understand what's going on. And everything is calculated. So it's not going to be, you know, and nobody's going to be able to do something like this. There's going to be a lone wolf out there that's going to pull anything off without them knowing. Everything is monitored today, controlled, watched. Nobody's getting away with anything unless they know about it. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. You know, if there's something that's going to happen, we would know about it. Or something, you know, it's just not sporadic. Something, you know, just throw cards up in the air and let one fall and say, that's it, Jack of Spades. I mean, it doesn't work like that. You know? You understand where I'm coming from?
Maybe they want to see what the solar radiation is. How much of the solar radiation that hits the Earth is dissipated by the moon getting in front of it?
Or maybe it's just an eclipse and everybody's just going to watch it and then go home.
Yeah. Well,
I'm trying to understand what military objective is served by this.
House speaking here, this is what NASA has to say. NASA to launch sounding rockets into moon shadow during the solar eclipse. This is from NASA's website. NASA will launch 3 sounding rockets during the total eclipse on April 8th to study how the Earth's upper atmosphere is affected when sunlight momentarily dims over a portion of the planet. The atmospheric perturbations around the eclipse path, or APEP, sounding rockets will launch from NASA's Wallops Flight Facility in Virginia to study the disturbances in the ionosphere created when the moon eclipses the sun. The sounding rockets had previously been launched and successfully recovered from White Sands Test Facility in New Mexico during the October 23 annual solar eclipse. They have been refurbished with new instrumentation and will be relaunched in the April 2024 eclipse. The mission is led by Aro Bajaria, a professor of engineering physics at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Florida, where he directs the Space and Atmospheric Instrumentation Lab. The sounding rockets will launch at 3 different times, 45 minutes before, then during, and then 45 minutes after the peak of the local eclipse. These intervals are important to collect data on how the sun's sudden disappearance affects the ionosphere, creating disturbances that have the potential to interfere with our communications. There's a clue. So if there's interference in our communications, it's of course going to be the eclipse's fault, and not the fact that we're firing up these rockets, right? The ionosphere is a region of the Earth's atmosphere that is between 55 and 310 miles above the ground. It's an electrified region that reflects and refracts radio signals and also impacts satellite communications as the signals pass through. Understanding the ionosphere and developing models to help us predict disturbances is crucial to making sure our increasingly communication-dependent world operates smoothly. So there you have it. That's the official explanation of this. Okay, continue.
Correction, Lorraine. It won't be the eclipse's fault. We've already established whose fault. If the thing happens with the communications and they're disrupted for that amount of time, it's not going to be the eclipse's fault. It's going to be Trump's fault.
Of course, that's right.
Yeah. So are we saying that the corona created by the eclipse is going to cause some sort of communications blackout or disruption, and that's the tactical advantage that could be occasioned by the eclipse? Is that it?
We've had eclipses. We've had like 18 eclipses in the last 10 years, you know?
Right.
Nothing's happened.
Well, we don't know what happens during them. I'm trying to understand what tactical advantage is going to be occasioned by simply an eclipse showing up. I don't recall any great disruptions in communication caused by eclipses.
There are. As a matter of fact, NASA has a very handsome reward for anyone, principals, or why capsules and space shuttles, when they re-enter the atmosphere, that communication, you can't make communication with them. Until
for 1 minute
down to a lower altitude, it just stops
for 1 minute.
Right.
For
well,
1 minute,
I can understand why that happens because
they're going through a certain phase of the. Yeah, they're going through a certain phase between the Earth and outer space and the ozone and all that. So yeah, they lose communication.
I mean, the heat generated by the reentry. The heat is so intense generated during reentry. Maybe that caused a disruption in the radio waves.
Right. Actually, and not only that, it's about measuring the radiation, too, because increases in radiation will cause physiological and physical changes to humans on this planet.
I got a question for Sarge.
You may have a horn come out your forehead.
I got a question, Sarge. Why do they call booby traps booby traps? What's boobies got to do with them? I don't understand.
Because they get the boobs who are trapped by them. That's the point. Because the booby trap traps the boobies.
the boob.
I guess.
He's
going
to be on the alert. He's going to be on the alert not to get caught by him, see?
Yeah.
They've used boobies throughout the century to trap men.
Oh, yeah, man. That's one of the biggest traps there is. Some woman is shaking her boobies.
There you go. Think about Helen of Troy.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to keep that in mind as I walk down the streets in the city. I'll just shake my boobies and steal all the guys' wallets.
That's why you have a partner. This way you shake your boobies and they steal the wallets.
I wonder who invented that name. You're the expert, Sergeant History. I wonder who invented that name.
Well,
I don't know.
That's a million dollar question.
Oh, well, Robert looked up Hootenanny.
Some boobie.
Robert
some
looked up Hootenanny and put it in the chat room. That's an Appalachian colloquialism that was used in the early 20th century U.S. as a placeholder name to refer to things whose names were forgotten or unknown. In this usage, it was synonymous with thingamajig or whatchamacallit, as in hand me that hootenanny. So that's his explanation. So, Robert, go look up what the historical slang term of the booby trap.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatchamacallit is something I used to use a lot when I couldn't think of the name of a particular thing, you know. I was just like, oh, that whatchamacallit, you know. And then, of course, there's a freaking candy bar named that.
Well,
yeah,
don't
which
forget.
Which is actually a really good candy bar. At least it used to be. I used to love whatchamacallit. Candy bars.
I don't remember that one.
Don't forget, and don't ever forget Hoosie Watson.
Hoosie Watson. I haven't heard of that one. But
well,
I know
rest
in peace. Well,
if you ever
use terms like that, because he never had the names for anything. He was literally like, "Will you hand me that thingamajig over there by the whatchamacallit?" Nobody knew what the hell he was talking about. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I can guarantee you this: if you ever had a Hoosie Watson in your hand, you'd never forget.
All right. Well. After this eclipse is over with, what's the next fiasco now that's going to be the talking points here? You know, what's going on? Is Trump, elections? I mean, what's going on? You know, what's the next thing that's going to keep us distracted from what's really going on?
Let's see. Let me make something up here real quick. Yeah.
Well, I know property taxes here in North Carolina, they jacked those up.
They're going to put on one of the largest, most amazing hootenannies since Woodstock.
Okay, that's good. Well, anyway, property taxes have jacked up here in North Carolina, like Tave was talking about in Ohio there, where they just jacked up like 60%. They're doing it here, too. So I don't know about your guys' state, how it's working out there, but 60-70% tax rate hike, property tax.
That's insane. Yep. But I can see it happening. I think that here in Oregon, like, we're high enough as it is, we're already stretched enough that I think that if they're going to try to push a huge spike in property taxes on us, there would be quite a bit of resistance to that.
Well, there is
here,
too.
Unless you tax that which is putting humans out of work, you're going to pay a lot more, or you're going to have a complete collapse. A partial collapse of your infrastructure. Because when you put people out of work that's paying employee taxes that go toward infrastructure and other things, well, that source of revenue is gone. So that means that those who happen to still be working, their taxes are going to go up to cover that which are no longer.
Well, again, the revenue from our taxes does not go towards building projects. It may look that way on the books, but it doesn't, because they sell bonds and they float bonds, and the state doesn't get its money from the individual taxpayer. They get it from the Treasury Department, which gets it from the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve gets it from, guess who? Uncle Sam. It's a revolving door of debt. That's all it is. There's no such thing as money. No such thing. It's all monopoly, the game.
Yeah.
You bet it is.
There's another lesser-known game called The Big Deal, but that's neither here nor there. Think about it. What would happen, I've talked about this before, but what would happen if we repealed the Federal Reserve Act?
It's not a new crash.
What would happen to that circle of debt if we repeal the Federal Reserve Act?
The economy would crash. Because everything's floated, everything's done.
The economy, the way it works, there's a daily infusion of cash in the banks to cover all of the outstanding loans and everything else that they've transacted. And without that cash, the economy would come to a halt immediately, unless they had a plan to phase it out gradually.
Yeah.
They need that. The banks need that capital. They notify the Federal Reserve as to what they need to cover their shortfalls. Absent that, their shortfalls aren't covered. That's the problem with fractional banking.
Yeah. There's nothing
backing
the dollar.
I don't know. There's no doubt. You can't just precipitously phase it out without making a complete, almost near complete collapse of the economy. So they have to phase it out gradually. They couldn't do it like right away.
Yeah, they have to phase it out gradually, of course.
Before they phase
it
out gradually.
Yeah, they're not going to go for it. The people are not going to go for it, especially the big wealthy Wall Street people who play Monopoly money all day long on Wall Street, making their credits and debits and all that crap.
How much? The banks don't have to have enough cash on hand to cover all the money they got outstanding. They never have enough.
No, they never do. They don't have any reserves, actually, technically. And they're not allowed, and by law, they're not allowed to lend out their reserves at all. So whatever money the bank has, they're not allowed to lend out.
Precisely. So, if they got rid of the Federal Reserve, it'd be some shit going on if they don't do it the right way. Ain't no doubt about that. It'd be worse than the system we got now if they don't do it right when they get rid of it.
And you know something else, guys? Just an aside here, we're talking about money issues. The asshole that is Letitia James is going after the guy who's basically going to try and cover the $175 million for Trump. You know, that loan for Trump.
$175 billion? Did you say billion or million?
Million.
Million, not billion.
He meant million. He meant million. It's 175 million.
I meant million for Trump. She's going after that guy. Oh, on the fact that he may have had something to do with the subprime mortgage crisis or whatever the fuck it was at the time.
I'm sure he did. Yeah.
That's exactly what she's doing now.
No, it's not that. She doesn't want him. Anybody that has anything to do with Trump, and this guy is going to cover that money, is going to cover that loan, or try and cover that loan anyway, for Trump, for that $175 million. This too is a political prosecution. It's all about Trump. It's all about Trump.
Well, you got to remember, Mike, Letitia James is trying to save her own life.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a threat. She's got a threat over her right now. That could possibly be that she's going to get killed because of the
mm-hmm.
fact she had sold Trump's properties to some individuals for pennies on the dollar, and she does not have that property to give now. So her
right.
life is probably her life is probably on the line, and she's going to do everything she can to get that get those properties so whoever bought them will get off her butt.
Yeah, she is, but she's not worried her life's on the line, though. I mean, you know,
what?
She'll probably get in trouble. She, her life isn't on the line, though. She's not going to die.
Well, she's absolutely
well,
saved.
Yeah, just like,
no doubt
just like Kennedy wasn't going to die because he wanted to get off the Federal Reserve.
That's way different.
She,
that's
she,
huge.
She is dealing probably with people who will kill her if
for
she
what?
Doesn't
what did she
provide.
Do? Yeah, how are they going to get away with that? Well, why? Why would they kill her? Why?
Why? Because she
yeah.
did not provide, she did not give them the property that they paid for.
They'll get their money back.
Ah.
the money is all it is, the transfer of wealth. That's all it is. It's not like you're putting $20 in your pocket. It's all just transfer of digits. That's all it is from one account to
yeah,
another.
I would think that anything she negotiated in a backroom deal would be conditional upon the state of New York actually seizing the assets before any agreement went into effect. That wouldn't – I mean, I know she's arrogantly stupid, but I find it hard to believe she's that goddamn stupid that she would do
yeah.
all of that before – I mean, talk about counting your chickens before they hatch.
Well,
I'm not putting anything outside the realm of possibility. Don't get me wrong, but I'm just saying, at some point, one of her advisors would have to point out to her, Madam Attorney General, you really ought to wait until before concluding any agreements that the state has in hand the properties.
Yeah.
They never done that. They never did that. They never got to that point. They still haven't.
That's why she's going after this guy that gave Trump, that's going to probably help Trump get the money, has helped Trump get the money, the $175 million, because she doesn't want Trump to be able to even pay a fraction of that $450 million or $500 million that the idiot judge said Trump had to pay. Not even a fraction.
Trump had the money. Trump had the money.
Right.
I thought he was worth $7 billion or something, or $13 billion.
Oh,
no.
He's got the wealth, Joe, but he doesn't have it on hand as cash money. It's in real estate. That's where his wealth is, and he got to liquidate it in order to get cash. They wouldn't allow him to put up any of his properties as collateral. He had to come up with cash. That was the point. They looked at his Federal Election Commission filings, which he said he had $500 million, and they said, we're going to take that away from him. That's what they premised this fine on, or this judgment, was on taking away his cash in order for him to be able to implement his campaign. That's the whole objective.
When he appealed.
With a realistic bond.
Yeah, but I thought when he appealed, that stayed the execution of the judgment.
No. They refused to let that happen.
That's right. The judge specifically said
the judge
that the
ordered him
would
to
not,
pay.
Yeah, would not put the seizure of the property in abeyance. The judge specifically denied that request. So he had to come up with the money, or she was going to start putting padlocks on all of the states in New York.
Well,
well,
I took a guy
like
plane
this,
guys.
This
yeah,
is unprecedented. We have never seen this before.
No.
Let's just be real about it. It ain't got nothing to do with the law.
But hang on, hang on. I took a guy to small claims court once, and I won. And the guy wanted to appeal, and the judge told me he had to put up a bond, I remember. You know, it wasn't that much, but it was a couple $1,000s because I won like $700 from him. He owed me money for landscaping services. So, yeah, so it makes sense.
When it comes to Trump, rules are off. Whatever they can get away with him, they intend to get away with it. You can't look at this like it's normal judicial procedure. It's New York, Jake.
Yo.
What about Jake? Like in Chinatown.
Yo.
Remember the movie Chinatown?
What did
John Huston say to Jack Nicholson? Hey, it's Los Angeles, Jake. It's Chinatown, Jake.
Oh.
Yep.
It's New York, Jake.
It's more like one flew over the cuckoo's nest.
Is not coming out of Donald Trump's pockets. It's insured. General liability insured.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. It's a bond agency.
That's what this is. That's what this guy is. He's trying to give him $175 million insurance. That's what this bond is. And they're trying to not allow this by going after this guy. They're trying to not allow him to get that bond.
Well, you know.
Everything this woman is doing is illegal, and I can't understand it, that she's allowed to get away with this mess.
It happens to all of us.
It's
New York,
you know?
Jake. It's New York, Jake.
Happens to all of us, man.
Found the perfect little toady judge, Enduron, to carry out her nefarious scheme. She got exactly the venue she wanted. Look at this absurd evaluation of Mar-a-Lago at $18 million. Who in the fuck believes that to be right?
Yeah.
The whole thing is rigged. I mean, have you ever seen anything more blatantly rigged in your life?
Yeah.
I never have.
Yes, I have. I lived it.
Not this thing this big. Nothing this big in American history.
The amount of money, but I would say, that big. Actually worse, my life.
But I'm just saying, I mean, a former president? And, you know, and this poor judge evaluates Mar-a-Lago at $18 million? With vacant lots in the same vicinity are going for $200 million vacant lots?
All right, sorry.
Hey.
Yeah, sorry. I had a guy who was in law enforcement for 32 years get up in front of a jury and testify that a laceration around my neck only gave out one drop of blood. Okay? So I've heard it all. Yeah, so I've heard shit before like that crazy shit.
Well,
you got to look at it. Of like accidentally cutting yourself while shaving, basically, is what they're trying to say.
Yeah, that was in the book, actually. Yeah.
You got to look at it like this: a corporation, a manufacturing corporation. Let's take, for instance, Boeing for right now with all of their problems with their product and stuff like that, goes to court and gets sued, and they are fined criminally negligent for their manufacturing process and everything. That has killed many, 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 many people because their airplanes come out of the sky, okay? They're found guilty. They may get $100 million fine. Max. $100 million fine. Okay? On the other hand, they looked at his finances and they found out how much he was worth, and that is all they're going to take. They're going to take it all, which is 10 times the amount of money, which is 10 times the amount of money that any other corporation in the world would have to pay in fines for killing people.
Boy, they're going to take. They're going to take it all. They're going to take yours too. They're going to take
no
it
victims.
All.
Yeah, they
no victims other than an attorney general who claims the state of New York was a victim of a fraud when nobody was hurt and any damages.
They're going to get it all from you. All of it.
If they find the corporation guilty, they can't take a penny of his. There's an invisible shield that lies between a corporation and its shareholders and officers, unless they do something terribly wrong. Like messing up federal withholding taxes, then
what don't you understand, Bianca? What don't you understand? The law does not apply. The law does not apply. They're breaking all the rules.
Joe, I'm not going to holler at you, but I'm going
to
tell you this.
Not
I'm
you,
not going
to
holler at you. Let me tell you this. I experienced these things myself, Joe Gibson. See, if my crane turned over and killed up a bunch of people, they don't mess with my money. They only go through the insurance companies, and then if anything further is ruled by a court, the assets of the business. And we had a
talking about an accident, Bianca.
It's the same thing. It's liability. Liability.
We're talking about Donald Trump. We're talking about corruption here. We're talking about corruption in the New World Order. That's got nothing to do with an accident.
It needs to happen. Corruption is legal. There's nothing illegal about corruption unless you get caught.
This is a perfect example of corporate maritime law being taken into effect. Because if you're out at sea and under maritime law, the law applies as the captain of the ship wishes it to be applied. And he can make up new laws as he goes along if he wants to, because they're out at sea. That's maritime law for you.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. The laws that Alvin Bragg used to prosecute Donald Trump and the laws that this bastard judge used, that Letitia James used, they used executive laws of the state of New York. That's what they were charged with on the indictment sheet. And that's also what they were charged with at Fat Alvin Bragg in Manhattan. They used laws, one, United States federal election law, which is a federal jurisdiction, which they bootstrapped onto a state crime that was the statute of limitations in order to revive it. And he assumed authority over federal election law as a local prosecutor. And he's getting away with it thus far. Now, the laws used didn't have nothing to do with maritime law. They were laws that were passed by the legislature of the state of New York and or the federal government. And that's how they're doing this. And that's why this thing is going to be overturned, because the appeals court are going to look at all this and say, you got to be out your motherfucking mind to try to charge this man with this shit. Where do you get the jurisdiction to do it? But the appeals process has got to play itself out.
There was no crime committed. Zero crime committed. To have a crime, you have to have a victim of fraud or a victim of murder or something like that. There is no victim here. There is no crime committed. There was no fraud committed. Zero. He valued his property. He got his loan. He paid back the loan with interest as the contract went. Under pure contract law, okay? There was no crime. There was no victim. There was nothing that broke the There was nothing that broke the contract between Trump and the banks.
And the banks agreed with his assessment after the codicil warning them of doing your own diligence, as if he had to tell a financial institution to do their own diligence on the person or entity they're giving a loan to. They always do it. They did it. They agreed with Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. There was no victim. And by the way, the New York Supreme Court has ruled in case law, it's precedent, that in order for there to be a fraud, there have to be discernible damages to an individual or individuals, identifiable damages. That's the Supreme Court. Remember, it hasn't gotten to that point yet, but that's already been precedent in previous Supreme Court decisions. The objective of all of this lawfare is not to enforce the law or do justice. It is to derail Donald Trump. Getting a conviction is secondary. It's to derail his presidential campaign.
Just like Alvin Bragg's law that he's trying to bring to court. That court process and the trial that is going, and the judge is going to require Donald Trump to be present in court every day for the trial that is expected to last 6 weeks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. This is lawfare. This is Soviet shit.
Dan Bongino said, what needs to happen with these people is they have to be dealt real political damage
to that point.
Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, I gave you an example. Letitia James, they say she's worth $15 million in wealth, right?
Same thing. Republican, Democrat, that.
But here's my point. What Trump ought to do is he ought to sue her for libel and sue her for the $15 million to teach her a lesson.
Sure. Meanwhile, we're starving, and the country's going to hell.
Yeah.
And they're suing over hundreds of millions of dollars.
I'm trying to make a point here about these people that are trying to do, that are interfering in the election and trying to do damage to Trump. You got them trying
to Trump's not going to save us. Trump's not the answer.
I'm not saying Trump's going to save us. I'm saying you got to teach them a lesson. You got to find a way to damage them to teach them a lesson. Right now, they're not learning anything. All right? They can get away with whatever the hell they want to get away with right now. Until you teach these people a lesson, until you slap little Johnny's hand for getting into the cookie jar, they're not going to learn anything. You know? So think about it. It's like the famous movie Trading Places with Eddie Murphy. What do you do to teach a rich person a lesson? You make them a
handcuffs.
Poor person.
Handcuffs. Handcuffs on Hillary Clinton.
Well,
Trump policies will save a lot of people. I can name you at least two or three. One, school choice, a national. Two, constitutional carry. Three, doing away with that deal of NAFTA that would allow China to produce cars in Mexico and ship them into the United States, tariff and duty free.
I agree. But what happens after Trump is out? We're right back to the same shit. And matter of fact, we'll be there. And really, some of his policies are going to help, but really, locally, it's not going to really affect too much here. I mean, you know what? Everyone thinks gas prices are going to magically drop back down to $1.45 a gallon when Trump takes over. We're going to go to the moon again. You know, I mean, it's like we're looking at like when he was president in 2016. Like everything's going to go back to then. You know, it's not going to happen, man. Not going to happen.
Their lawfare that they are doing right now. is not so much against Donald Trump. They are using this lawfare, and they are using Donald Trump as a prime example of what the American people can suffer if the American people stand up and say no.
Yep. And we're not doing that yet. We're too busy watching TV waiting for Trump.
Yeah, I can see that. It's a total fear tactic against anybody because they're looking beyond Trump. You know, they're even if Trump is elected, they're looking beyond that. They don't want anybody coming after Trump that is aligned with Trump to continue on. I mean, as a matter
of
fact, Biden just changed a federal rule so to make it harder to fire federal employees. And this is because they anticipate Donald Trump, if he's elected, will fire a bunch of federal employees for incompetence, tyranny, you know, everybody that's a part of this whole cabal against him. And so Biden just recently, I think in the last couple of days, changed the rules to make it harder for not just Donald Trump but anybody to get rid of federal employees that are a part of this insanity, you know, this cabal.
I don't think Trump's going to care about that goddamn rule. He could very easily by you know, executive order change that thing back. So.
But the damage
has already
been done.
He can do just like Ronald Reagan did with the air traffic controllers. He fired every single fucking one of them. Every swinging dick that was an air traffic controller when they went out on illegal strike.
Well, that'll something like that would have more ramifications than they did back then. You know, we got even more planes in the air now than we did even back then.
That would be huge.
He can go department by department and fire every single one of them in the department. No seniority.
There'll be lawsuits challenging. It'll be tied up in court and all that. So you can't do everybody like that.
Until those lawsuits, Congress appropriates
all that funding. You know, so you know, a president can't undo what Congress has already passed and put in place as far as financing either. So that's a double-edged sword as well.
He can fire every single swinging dick. And there's nothing Congress there is nothing Congress can do until Congress passes a law. He could turn back all the money back to the United States.
No, he cannot. He's not in charge of spending. He is not in charge of Congress's. Congress controls the purse, not the president.
He can take the money that Congress told him to spend, refuse to spend it, and send it back to the Congress.
He doesn't spend any money, Trump. He doesn't spend money, Trump. He has nothing to do with that.
Yes, he does. He's in charge.
Figure? He has to agree
because
to spend
the money. He is the executive of the corporation. Everybody in the government that's a bureaucrat works directly for Donald J. Trump or the President of the United States. They do not work for Congress.
No.
They do not work for Congress.
He's also the Commander-in-Chief.
He's the Commander-in-Chief. That's it. The Commander-in-Chief of the military, yes. But he's not. He's not in charge of the purse. No, he's not.
What are they
no, he cannot. He cannot. Hey, He cannot spend any money that Congress does not appropriate. There is nothing that says he has. There is nothing that says he has.
Only Congress can spend money. Only Congress can. The president cannot spend money. He cannot say, I'm going to issue $80 million to the state of Louisiana to do this. He can't do that.
Joseph.
He cannot.
Did he say how much money was going to historical black colleges?
Okay, we're going to allot this much for this department. And as the executor, you know, the executive branch, the president does have authority to go, okay, you know, we're going to take this much out of your budget, or we're going to take it out of discretionary spending, or out of emergency response spending, whatever. You know, they're the executor of it. So, you know, even though, you know, this a certain department is budgeted for a certain amount of money, there is a lot of leeway as far as what the president can do with that money that is allocated.
Yeah, as an example, look how he allocated money to historical black colleges.
Yeah,
he can go if Congress tells him that he has $100 million to spend on say the military, and he determines that the military does not need $100 million to do whatever it is they're going to do. He does not have to spend that $100 million. He can take whatever's left. He could take whatever he does not spend and give it back to the Congress.
But he cannot give it to other people, though. He can't take it and give it to anybody else.
He's not in charge of any money at all. Wait a minute. Joseph, listen. I didn't say he could give that money to anybody he wants. I can say he can return that money to Congress, not to anybody he wants to spend it on. If Congress tells Trump he's got money to buy 100 missiles, and Trump decides we don't need 100 missiles, we only need 80, so he buys the 80 missiles that is needed. He takes the other money for the other 20 missiles and returns it back to Congress.
Hey guys,
he did what
Ron
he was
Rex
supposed
is
to do.
Raising his hand in the queue. Sorry to interrupt, but Ron Rex raising his hand, so I'm going to go ahead and bring him on. And there is 12 minutes left of the live broadcast. So if you are out there and you are listening online and you want to continue as we go into the bonus hour, call in now, 563-999-3485 within the next 12 minutes, because after the live broadcast ends, then the audio will cut out if you're listening online. And so the only way to continue to participate in the show is to call in and be on the switchboard. So 563-999-3485, and welcome on Ron Rex.
Praise the Lord. Praise Jesus and praise me. The money that Trump gets, he gets to pocket it. It's his money. We don't care. He went to J.G. Wentworth, and he wanted his money now. Anyway, kidding. Boy, you're right. He gets a certain amount of money to buy certain things, and there's any month he gets it back, and they do whatever from there. That's the general reason. The president doesn't have the power to go fucking play with the piggy bank, the debit card. He doesn't have that. He can't do it.
Use contingency funds allocated from Congress. That's it. That's all he can. The power of the purse is through Congress only. Congressional authorization. Congress can provide money that is contingent on the president releasing it to such cases. An executive order could release funds that's what Congress called for. That's it. For instance, Congress could pass a law specifying give this money to the farmers in Iowa. The president cannot do that. He cannot. Okay?
Well, he can. In some appropriations, he can do a presidential order, an executive order to make that happen. real quick.
Only contingency
well, you know,
funds.
Yeah, just look at Biden with the bridge collapse. You know, Biden has already promised $60 million
right.
for rebuilding
the Francis Scott Key Bridge.
But in order to get any more, because he's using emergency funds. He's using the federal emergency funds to release that $60 million ahead to pay for it. But if he wants any more money, he's already allocated his limit. If he wants any more, Congress is going to have to approve it, right? And so this is kind of what we're talking about. It's like there are, you know, there is wiggle room for the president to have some discretionary spending depending on the circumstance.
Right.
The U.S. Constitution grants Congress the country's spending power. This means that the president cannot spend money without congressional authorization, whether it's through executive orders, presidential memorandum, or other means. The power of the purse lies with Congress. I don't care what you saw on TV.
Joseph, we are not talking about that. We are not talking about that at
all. He
can't
say I'm giving $60 million to a project in Baltimore. He can't say that. He can't do that. If he did say it, he's lying to you. He can't do that.
Joseph.
He will not get that money from President
Biden. We're not talking about that. We're talking about him refusing to spend the money and gives it back to Congress.
Why would he? Yeah, he has the power to veto. Yeah, but they can override him. I mean, what do you talk? I mean, but the power of the purse lies within Congress. Like I said,
I don't see Biden giving up any fucking money. He's got money, and he's gonna put it somewhere, like his pocket, probably. I mean, that's what he does.
Right.
He does this shit all the time. You know, send 30 fucking billion over there to fucking wherever, and fucking I get some of it back. That's the way to clean money.
Yeah, but.
He's not even taking into account. He's not even taking into account the insurance money that the insurance company should be paying to rebuild that bridge because it was their fucking boat that broke it.
Yep,
that is absolutely right. All this other crap. The shipping company had insurance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like
it's a
said,
lie.
Like,
I mean, there's
earlier,
probably all kinds of insurance companies involved.
The shipping company
has their insurance. Baltimore probably has insurance on, you know, their infrastructure like bridges and stuff like that. There's probably federal. If that was interstate, then there's going to be insurance companies covering that portion. I mean, there's all kinds of insurance companies involved, especially, insurance companies that are, impacted like other shipping companies that can no longer, operate and get in and out of there, and they have to alter their routes and things like that. I mean, there are probably so many insurance companies involved, and so that's literally why I see no reason why the federal government, why Biden should be going, we're going to pay for it, and get around that.
Exactly. So let me ask you this question.
There's going to be a ton of red tape between all of these insurance companies doing their investigations. And to rebuild this bridge, right? And the disruption of traffic,
insurance.
The disruption of everything.
So let me ask you a question, Lorian.
Guess who else?
Let me ask you a question.
Insurance. I've ordered containers of ammonia nitrate and phosphorus from Chinese companies, and the containers I had to get insurance from an insurance company to cover the loss if there ever was one. So all this stuff is insurance. Covered by insurance. Joe Biden is grandstanding.
Thank you.
What was your question for me?
Well, Bianchi pretty much cleared it, but let me ask you. So the president does not. So basically, the president does not have the inherent power to spend money through executive orders. The U.S. Constitution grants Congress the authority over spending. The president cannot unilaterally allocate taxpayer funds without congressional authorization. However, there are scenarios where executive orders can be used to disperse funds, particularly from contingency funds. These funds are subject to congressional intent and boundaries. For example, if Congress specifies a purpose for the funds, the president can release them accordingly. In summary, while the president cannot spend money arbitrarily, legal mechanisms allow for responsible fiscal management based on congressional authorization. So basically, Congress can tell him no.
Yeah, but they're not going to.
Right. But that's
And this comes out of, discretionary spending,
about.
like you just kind of said, discretionary spending based on an emergency response, which, that was a declaration of an emergency. with this bridge collapse. And so therefore he's allocated some funds, you know, to be able to initially respond, and anything more Congress is going to have to approve. And of course, Congress isn't going to, you know, who in their right mind, if you're elected to Congress, who's going to say no? You know what I mean? They're going to look bad. You know, it's all PR. Even though insurance companies should be able to handle it, even though, you know, federal funding should not go into this, like, at all. But nevertheless, it's all to look good, you know, because, you know, hey, it's an election year. Anybody that wants to look good, you better approve. But, you know, the federal government's footing the fucking bill for this.
It's all politics.
Right. This isn't what we were talking about. What we were talking about, Joe, was the president's power to execute or not execute in giving the money out. They have the power to.
Exactly.
Right.
He has no power.
About.
I just read it to you.
About the Department of Education and CRT and all that stuff.
Has no power.
These people that have no power, brother.
He has no power. He has no power. I just read it to you. Congress is the only one that allocates
right.
it. That's it. The president just signs off
right.
on it.
But once they allocate it, he has the power to execute it or not execute it as he sees fit. All right?
No, he doesn't. Congress does. No. Listen, Congress tells him where to put that money. I'm telling you right now. I just read it to you. Congress specifies a purpose for the funds. The president can release them accordingly. In summary, while the president cannot spend money arbitrarily, legal mechanisms allow for responsible fiscal management based on congressional authorization. That's it. It's all up to Congress.
Right, but he doesn't. His job is to execute. He's the chief executive of the thing. And if he, what does the chief executive do? He decides whether or not, in a business situation, he decides whether or not to spend money and where to
okay.
spend it, right?
Okay. And what?
Now,
and then Congress can say no.
Now, once that money gets allocated by the Congress, it's all in his hands to say, I go back to my example with the Department of Education and all the CRT funding. Okay, fine.
Okay. But Congress could say no.
So,
Congress could say no, Biden. We're no. Congress would have the final say.
You know, a case in point to answer your question, you remember when Trump called the Ukraine to make sure that there was no hanky-paint going on with the money that was going to Ukraine? Then when Biden told the Ukrainian people, you're not going to get the check, he had no responsibility to do that. That was up to Obama.
I guess. I don't know.
That's right. And then what did he say? What did he say when he said that? If he said, oh, give Obama a call and ask him.
Well, that's because it was already allocated by Congress, you see, and he could veto it.
Right, he could veto it. But, again, that's not the point. It was already allocated by Congress, and he could veto it. The problem is that's the thing, that he can – the president, the Congress can allocate the money all they want. If the president decides not to spend the money – he has that right.
Yes. He can say no, but he can't say yes. Listen, it's funny. It's a sticky situation. Like, he can say no, but he can't invent it. He can't invent the idea and allocate it himself. You know, that's what I'm trying to say. He can't just write a check and say, I want $40 billion going to Ukraine this year. Congress has to make that. He can't come up with that on his own. Now, if Congress sends $40 billion, now Biden can say, no, I don't want to do that. That he has that power. That's what I meant.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's what I've been trying to tell you.
Okay. Right. That's what we're trying to say, Joe. What we're talking about is the money that comes, what happens after Congress allocates the money, all right? Congress can allocate as much money as they want.
Yeah, but he can't divert. No, but you said he can divert it someplace else. He can't. He can't get that money.
Hey, guys, 30 seconds to call in. So if you're in the chat room, Jim Clark, if you can call in now. Anybody listening online, call in. You got 30 seconds. 563-999-3485.
We're not talking about him allocating it to spend someplace else. We're talking about him not spending it at all. That's what we're talking about.
Okay, and if he doesn't spend it, it goes back to Congress.
That's right.
What we've been trying to tell you.
No, that's not how you said it. You said he could divert it someplace else. You said, boy, if he wanted to put it someplace else,
he
could.
Divert it.
Let's replay it.
Don't be putting words in my mouth.
Well, you said he had the power to put it someplace else.
He can do that, too, because then Trump was taking defense money to build a wall.
Yeah.
No, he can't do that. No, only Congress. Yeah, it went through congressional approval.
Yeah.
What power does purse mean? If I got your purse, what's that mean?
He did take defense money to apply to the wall.
If I got your wallet, Bianchi, right? I got your wallet, and you say, well, Joe, I want to spend it on this Corvette, right? Right? I'm Congress. You're the president. And you say, well, then I want to spend it on a Mercedes. I could just continue to say no. Congress has the power.
That's what I'm talking about. The money had been allocated to the national defense, i.e. the Army, Navy, and Air Force. He took some of the money to apply to building a wall, claiming that it's defense of the country.
Okay, and who stopped it when he was building the wall? Who gave him a hard time the whole time? Pelosi and all them, right? They wouldn't allow it, right?
They couldn't do anything to him.
They didn't stop him. He built the wall, didn't he?
No. He didn't build a wall. How many miles of wall did he actually build?
He got a couple hundred miles built.
Big deal. Big deal.
But he did build it.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's a big deal because there's a couple of hundred miles that have a wall.
So what? They didn't have a wall to begin with. And they're cutting holes through it right now. Big deal.
That's because they took
the patrols off the wall so that they had the opportunity to.
This has been going on before Trump. This has been going on before Obama. This has been going on for a long time.
Yeah, it has. It has been going on for a long time. And guess what? Trump put a wrinkle in it. That's all he did was put a wrinkle in it. But it's been going on for a long time. Your government has been fucking you.
Not my government.
Your government has been bringing in people.
It's not my
so that they
I'm
can
a citizen
replace
of the Republic.
You.
I just told you that. I'm a citizen of the Republic. I got that on paper even. I'm not a corporate citizen.
Then why, Joe, are you in the fucking courts right now?
Because they got military rule over me. Because the people won't rise up and stand up for the Republican common law. Because they're contracted in like a bunch of suckers. They won't stand up and fight like me, who stands up and fights. They haven't got me in no court. I've walked out of there. And I'm still going to fight.
Yeah,
where's all the patriots at?
Goddamn lawyer, by the way. And I'm going to bring in Robert, Conservative Nation Media. Robert just raised his hand, so I'm going to go ahead and bring him on into the fold here. Hey, Robert.
How are you doing tonight?
Conversation going on?
Oh, absolutely.
I am blessed that Blog Talk Radio hasn't caused me any issues so far, knock on wood.
Amen.
Yeah, I was gonna mention the same thing. You guys were talking about the border. Now, I have an article that came out of Opinion Post today about the border here in New Mexico. And the border agents have conceded New Mexico Mountain down there is now under cartel control.
How about that?
They say They say the video posted by reliable Fox News reporter Matt Flynn shows illegal immigrants ravaging a mountain in Sunland Park, New Mexico, while Border Patrol agents apparently won't defend it, calling the mountain the cartels. Flynn wrote the video post, unbelievable, and it's got a video here about it. But it says Mount Crystal Ray is adorned by a 29-foot-tall statue of Jesus, which was erected in 1940 after the vision of Friar Lourdes Costa, who in 1933, looking out his back window out of his residence in the community of Smeltertown, envisioned erecting a monument at the summit of this glorious mountain. Since the purchase of the mountain, the building of the Jesus statue, Mount Crystal Ray has become a place, holy place for Catholics for generations. But the criminal illegal immigration seeping across the border by way of the mountain has led to vandalism and desecration, and the gang-related graffiti have scourged the holy place. The price tag to fix the damages is between $15,000 and $20,000, but they say they can't do it because there's too many illegals there and it's too treacherously terrain.
Right.
They said that the Border Patrol does not have the manpower to get them off of that mountain, so it's there.
Isn't that nice?
And of course, in our state, our governor will let that happen.
Oh, yeah. Where's the militia? Where's the militia? Where's the Patriots at? Where are you?
They're down there. There's a whole bunch of them down there getting
ready to
fight.
I wonder if they're part of the 200,000 deportation cases that were dismissed because DHS failed to file the paperwork. This is what I mentioned earlier in the show, at the beginning of the show. 200,000 deportation cases have been thrown out by immigration judges, according to a new report published by the Transactional Records Access Clearinghouse. Track researchers evaluated data from January 2021 to February 2024 and found that 200,000 asylum or other immigration cases were dismissed because the Department of Homeland Security didn't file paperwork with the courts in time for the scheduled hearings. Track, a nonpartisan nonprofit data center research center, is affiliated with the Newhouse School of Public Communications and Whitman School of Management at Syracuse University. One of the policies implemented by DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, for which he was impeached, relates to changing the detention and removal process. This included mass releasing illegal foreign nationals into the country who were given a notice to appear before an immigration court at a future date and location. In 2023, the Center Square first reported that Hondurans who illegally entered the country were being released by Border Patrol agents after giving them NTAs with court dates at an immigration court in North Carolina in 2026. NTAs state that the individual listed on it is the U.S. in the U.S. illegally is subject for removal. A Honduran's NTA obtained by the Center Square, for example, states, "You are an arriving alien. The Department of Homeland Security alleges that you, number one, are not a citizen or national of the United States. Number two, you are a native Honduras and citizen of Honduras. On or about May 2nd, 2023, you applied for admission to the United States at Brownsville, Texas, port of entry. You are an immigrant not in possession of a valid, unexpired immigrant visa, reentry permit, border crossing card, or other valid entry document required by Immigration and Naturalization Act. On the basis of the foregoing, it is charged that you are subject to removal from the United States pursuant to several federal laws listed. By law, DHS is required to file the NTA with the court listed on it. DHS issuing an NTA simply gives notice to the individual that they may be placed in removal proceedings, the Immigrant Legal Resources Center explained. The actual process for removal does not begin until DHS files the NTA to the immigration court. Once an NTA is filed with the immigration court and removal proceedings officially begin, an immigrant is on the path to the potential removal from the United States. Track explains DHS's duty to file NTAs in immigration court is an essential step in the immigration enforcement process. It also notes that of the 1 million cases already initiated in fiscal year 2024, 1 million. 97% are removal cases for which DHS must file an NTA. The article goes on. So this tells me that DHS is deliberately failing. They're deliberately not. They are being ordered by somebody to not file the proper paperwork to get these people out of here that are here illegally. They're deliberately let in. They're deliberately getting their cases thrown out. All of that. Yeah.
Well, you
and
know,
that's
that
my point. That's my point here, guys. Where does the DHS get its money to do its business? It gets its money from the Congress, allocated from the Congress, sent to them by the executed by the president, right?
Right.
Next time they come up for renewal of their funding from the Congress can renew their funding, but the president has the right to say, you haven't been doing your goddamn job. We're going to take away your goddamn funding.
That's true.
And they should do it. But this article that I just got through reading was something I was going to do on my show Friday, and, of course, we all know it didn't work. But I put a comment on here, and one of the things I said, take all the Democrats and the Republicans who do not protect our homeland at the southern border and remove them from office as fast as possible,
right,
or Mount Crystal Ray will not be the last thing taken here in New Mexico by the cartels and the illegals. We are losing our nation, and it's all because of the politicians who will not do their job to protect our borders. Now I say, hear me, Michelle Lujan Grisham, and all you stupid Democrats and Republicans who are not doing anything. Nothing good will come from this, and we will see a huge spike in fentanyl deaths coming to your neighborhood soon.
Well, here's the thing on that. That's why come I say that elected federal officials should be paid by the states that they represent. If they were, it's going to require an amendment to the Constitution, because it says they got to be paid by the State Department. But
if they were paid by the states
that they represent, then that governor and that legislator should say, you ain't doing your job. And
they don't represent the state. They represent a corporation in D.C. Join the republic and form your assemblies locally and start with your sheriff and start taking back your republic. Stop waiting for Donald Trump.
I hear what you say. Right now, when I went to the polls here about a couple months ago, I voted for state reps. I didn't vote for no corporation. Now, until you and your group has enough power and gumption to put that in place so it reads that when I go to the ballot, when times come for Paula Davis and for Franklin Falls to come out of their office, Bianca.
That's not our jurisdiction. We cannot do that. That's not our jurisdiction.
Gibson.
No.
Joe, I went to the poll and I voted for Franklin Falls for my state senator for the state of Louisiana and for my state representative, Paula Davis. I already done it.
And what for the Republic of the United States or for the United States of America? Which one?
For the Republic of Louisiana.
Well, I'll have to check on that, but I don't know about Louisiana right now. But I can tell you right now, if you didn't go to the Republic of the United States website and you're not have a republic or assembly formed over there in your state, then you're in the wrong jurisdiction.
Right. Well, and the other thing about Louisiana is, in some respects, this state is still ruled by the Napoleonic Code, in some respects.
What are you talking about?
You've heard of the Napoleonic Code, right?
I've heard of it, but I don't know what you're talking. I don't understand what you mean by that. I don't understand. What do you mean it's ruled by that in some respects? I don't get it.
There are two different sets of laws in Louisiana. There's the Louisiana Constitution and like I said, the Napoleonic Code.
I've never heard of that.
You know, we were French at one time. You were part of
you know, the French Empire in one time.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
look,
so go
we took
that,
back
that
the Republic.
I mean, like
the
I
Republic
said earlier,
was weak.
Like I said earlier, I mean, with the whole DHS thing, they're not doing their job, so they don't deserve to get paid for not doing their job.
They are doing their job
exactly
according
right
to how they're supposed to do it. They're doing it according
yeah,
to how they're supposed
not
to
not
do it. That is, they're not under
job,
our jurisdiction. They're unconstitutional agencies. They don't
well,
matter. They're
true
unconstitutional. They don't work for you. I just don't understand. How come you don't understand
that is
this?
True. That amongst a lot of other federal agencies that shouldn't exist. DHS shouldn't
well,
exist.
Well, yeah, that's the point.
I mean,
if they don't
you know,
work
Department
for
of
us,
Energy,
we
all of these things
them
that rule over us shouldn't
exactly
exist. Department of Education. I mean,
they don't
all
work
of
for
it
you.
You know, they don't
that's
work for
right
us. And I'm going to switch gears while I still can. I'm going to switch gears because I did talk at the beginning of the show that I wanted to play a couple of short clips about your car spying on you. And so I'm going to switch gears here, and I want to play these couple of clips because it's pretty interesting. So if you have a newer car, and you might not be aware that this is actually what's going on. And so the first clip is an MSNBC clip from March 28th, is your car a snitch and what your car is telling insurers? And then the second clip, and that was about 6.5 minutes long. The second clip is shorter, 3.5, is your car spying on you? And it's a more local WSB-TV report on it from April 2nd. And so I want to play these two back to back because I think that it's a pretty interesting thing for anybody listening to the recording and everybody that's on right now. To know what these new cars are really doing. So go ahead and mute yourselves on your end. I want to play it before, you know, we've got some time here before the switchboard shuts down, about 45 minutes. I'm sure we'll have some discussion on it. And then let's regroup after this, okay? So sorry to interrupt, but I did want to try to get to this tonight while we still can. So here we go with the first one. Is your car a snitch? What your car is telling insurers.
Now a follow-up to a story that we told you about earlier this month. A report in the New York Times about how auto companies sell data from connected cars to data brokers who then in turn sell it to insurance companies that can use it to charge you higher premiums. I looked into the data privacy settings of my own car to try and disable possible outside monitoring, and I wasn't able to do it. I've been trying to do this since Monday. Every day there are more calls back and forth. It's really complicated. The dealership can't figure it out either. I've been on the phone with them every day. Our next guest wrote this story for the Times, and after her initial report, General Motors actually said that it had stopped sharing driving details with data brokers. Joining us right now is Kashmir Hill. She is the New York Times tech reporter and author of Your Face Belongs to Us. And Kashmir, I have to say, this story is one that really made me sit up and pay attention because you talked to consumers who had either had their insurance rates jacked up because data was being collected they didn't know about, or in some cases they couldn't get insurance. Mm-hmm. What happened?
Yeah, well, this was very shocking for drivers. I think most people assume when they spend a lot of money on this car, what happens in it is going to stay private. But what was happening to people who drove cars made by General Motors was that information was being collected about when they sped, how many miles they drove, how many times they hard braked or rapidly accelerated, because they had enrolled, some say unknowingly, in a program called Smart Driver. It was very shocking to them, and they found out about it because their insurance rates started going up. And when they asked the insurance companies why, they said, go pull your LexisNexis disclosure report. This is a data broker who works with insurance companies. And when they did that, they saw all this driving data, and the report said where it came from, and it was from General Motors.
Wow. Every time I turn my car on, it says, it gives me this privacy warning that your information is being sent back, and we're watching it. There are ways you can shut it off in your car, but I have tried, and every time I shut it off, it turns it right back on. dealt with my dealership. I'm with a Nissan. I dealt with my dealership this week. They can't even figure out how to do it without entirely disabling the satellite feed for satellite radio and the GPS monitoring. They got me to sign up for another app that basically says now if I want to shut anything off, I have to call somebody, fill out forms, and mail them in. Is this something every car company is doing?
You are not alone, Becky. I mean, I'm hearing from drivers across the country who are waking up to the fact that their car is a smartphone on wheels, and it's doing all this data collection. And we as consumers just don't know. We can't see it.
You can't even shut it off when you try to. I think that's the bigger issue.
You know it.
You send us this thing saying we're monitoring this. If you don't want it, opt out. It's nearly impossible to opt out of these stupid programs. And by the way, you may say, yeah, your phone already knows all that. That's fine. Apple is not selling my information to third-party data hackers.
Well, smartphones have airplane mode, right? Like, you can turn off the sending of data. But with cars, most cars, there's not an off button that says stop sending data for my car. Like, I don't want, you know, the automaker or anyone else to know where I'm driving or how I'm driving. And so this is just a huge problem. And all the experts are telling me, look, we're kind of at with cars where we were with smartphones a decade ago when people did start waking up to the fact that they were carrying around a tracking device. And so we got very granular controls in the smartphone that allow us to more easily control the information leaving it. And that really needs to happen with cars.
I think GM took the right
people
step.
People need privacy.
Yeah, I think GM took the right step by saying they're not going to sell that data anymore. You've spoken to people in Washington who are paying attention to this. And if car companies don't follow suit, I think there could be some things that they take action on.
Yeah, I talked to Senator Ed Markey for this story from Massachusetts, and you know, he has been, as many lawmakers across the country have been, asking car companies, you know, what data are you collecting? How are you using it? Who are you selling it to? And when I told him about these programs and specifically what General Motors had done, he said, you know, that really sounds like a violation of the law that protects consumers against unfair and deceptive business practices. And yes, GM, after my story came out, announced that they're no longer going to be sharing this data with these two data brokers who were selling it to the insurance industry. And they said they're reevaluating, you know, their privacy practices. But yeah, I mean, what these companies were doing was just putting this kind of in the fine print, in the privacy policies that no one reads. And that is just not how this should be done.
Kashmir, I think you're shining a light on a very important area for some of these things. What do you anticipate happens next? Because what I was told yesterday is that, you know, wait till 2025. Next year, you are going to see cars that make this look like child's play. That right now, they're only collecting about 10% of the information that they'll be capable of collecting. Or that, you know, my car's a couple years old. The ones that come out next year, literally, can collect far more data. Chips have gotten better. What happens next?
I mean, cars have hundreds of sensors and cameras, and they're doing all kinds of data collection. This benefits us. I mean, this is why we have cruise control and the ability to know that there's a car, you know, next to us. We get all these warnings and alerts. The fact that you can kind of control your car with your smartphone, that you can find it. There are great conveniences, but they do come with this downside where it's just possible to collect so much information about us.
They're going to have a camera watching you the entire time you're driving.
I mean, your car knows how much you weigh because there's sensors in the seat when you sit down, because they need to know if there's a child, you know, in the passenger seat so the car can turn off the airbags. So it's why we really do need to address consumer control of that data, because when I was talking to drivers, you know, that this happened to, they said it felt like a betrayal. They had paid so much money for this car,
right,
and the data is leaving it. And you know, it just is really outside of the expectations of what people expect to happen with their car.
My car was not going to rat me out. I don't like the way I drive.
Uh-huh.
All right, and here's the shorter clip coming up next, and then let's talk about it.
Your car could be spying on you, and at least one automaker is sharing that information with insurance companies. I'm George Estevez, and for Justin Farmer.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Linda Stouffer. A Henry County woman learned it was happening to her when her insurance bill skyrocketed, and now she's warning others about the issue. New at 6, Channel 2 consumer investigator Justin Gray is live with how you can find out if your data has also been shared. Justin.
Yeah, Linda, Tanika Clay requested her LexisNexis consumer file. This is it. More than 200 pages, most of it from General Motors, data about her driving from the onboard computer in her car.
So this is it.
This is it.
Hundreds of pages.
Hundreds of pages. This is my LexisNexis consumer disclosure report. I'm appalled.
Hundreds of pages of data on Tamika Clay's LexisNexis credit report from her Chevy Camaro.
Connecting to OnStar.
She's learned the OnStar system is tracking things like acceleration events, high-speed events, and hard brake events. And GM shared 603 of those entries with data brokers.
OnStar app, you know, you're thinking safety and if it gets stolen, but certainly not spying on me and sending information to the insurance company.
It's the exact same scenario described in this proposed class action lawsuit filed just one day after Clay received her LexisNexis report this month. Clay requested the report because her insurance had gone up 80%, and when she tried to shop around, an insurance broker sent a denial letter and suggested she check her LexisNexis records to see why.
All this means I'm a bad insurance risk and hike my premium.
Your car's, you know, essentially turning into a computer and collecting data on you as you drive.
Michael Brooks is executive director of the Center for Auto Safety and says technology is ahead of the law here.
Right now, there are no federal laws requiring that automakers have privacy protections for their owners or cybersecurity protections on their vehicles.
After the lawsuit became public, GM announced it is severing ties with two data brokers, telling us in a statement, quote, as of March 20th, OnStar Smart Driver customer data is no longer being shared with LexisNexis or Versic. Customer trust is a priority for us, and we are actively evaluating our privacy processes and policies. Anyone can do what Clay did, request their LexisNexis consumer disclosure report under the Fair Credit Reporting Act.
Never did I imagine that it would be spying on us and sending information about driving habits. That's just unbelievable.
Now, we also reached out to LexisNexis, who tells us in a statement, quote, telematics-based insurance programs can be extremely valuable in helping consumers improve their driving and lower risk. We utilize various channels for consumers to request a copy of their LexisNexis consumer disclosure report and to dispute any data on that report that the consumer feels is inaccurate. And it's not just GM sharing data. In fact, LexisNexis in a 2020 press release said that more than 10 million cars they're getting data from, and they have contracts with 5 of the 10 top insurance companies. Again, you can request a copy of your LexisNexis consumer report free of charge and see if your data is being collected. Reporting live in Midtown, Justin Gray, Channel 2 Action News.
Well, there you have it. And I think what's interesting in this is, number one, you know, there's nothing obligating the prevention of the sharing of data, and with the first clip, not being able to turn it off, you know, like with our phones, you know, you can turn location off, you can put it in airplane mode, you can do certain things, but with these onboard systems, you can't turn it off, even though they say, you know, they might say you can, but like that first report said, you know, it would turn off and then be automatically turned back on again. And so, you know, when we're talking about things like AI getting involved in this too, in controlling things, you know, how private is our data? And I remember way back when, you know, I'm with Allstate, and I installed the DriveWise app to supposedly save me money, but I drive so little, you know, and just around town, and it really wasn't saving me that much money. You know, it only saved me like maybe like $3 or something a month. And I'm like, this is just not worth it. You know, why would I want, you know, and the DriveWise app was on my phone so that, you know, it was obviously dependent on my having my phone with me because my vehicle does not have that capability. It's a 1999. So I don't have all this onboard shit that all these new cars do. And so, when I'm just like, why would I want to tell my insurance company directly how I'm driving, and only to save like $3. It's not worth it, and how much, every time I speed up, every time I brake too soon, they don't know. They don't know that, the light just turned yellow and the car in front of me slammed on their brakes, so I had to slam on my brakes too. So why should I allow this data to influence my rate, which could very well make my rate go up? My rate continues to go up anyway. And so this is kind of interesting stuff. It's one of those things where it's like, as AI even becomes more and more prevalent, which I'm sure newer cars are going to incorporate more and more AI, automatic braking systems and cameras everywhere and all that kind of stuff, which I don't trust. I don't really trust all this automation. I also read, a lot on how inaccurate, I saw another report on how inaccurate some of these automated systems are in vehicles where they did tests where you're, backing up your vehicle and there's a small child right behind you. Of course, it wasn't an actual small child. It was a dummy. But nevertheless, the cameras and the systems failed to actually stop and, hit the dummy kid anyway. And it was found that only like 10 to 15% of the time. So you're paying all this money for these new vehicles, for all of these automated systems, and they don't even work half the time, but what it is doing is then selling all of that data, and then the camera feeds and stuff like that. I mean, who's collecting that? NSA could be collecting it. FBI can be collecting it. Who knows? All they have to do is ask for it. And not even you in particular. They can ask for, we want everybody's driving data, in a 10-mile radius of this person or something, so they can do these blanket requests, and they usually get it because companies fail to actually give them pushback. So what do you all think of that?
Well, I can tell you this, Gloria Ann. I had the same DriveWise plug-in in my car, and it was about last year sometime. I got a letter from Allstate saying that they are going to discontinue that program, and that we should pull our DriveWise unit off our cars and send it back to them, which had me confused for quite a while. I'm trying to figure out, well, why in the hell are they doing this? I called my insurance broker, and they had no idea why they're doing it. Well, now I know why they're doing it, because they don't need to be spending all that money on all those little units that are out there and all those little cars that they insure, because they can just go to LexisNexis and get to all that information for free or whatever,
Yeah, well, exactly, especially if you have all these onboard systems that are recording it. The onboard, cars have black boxes, didn't you know?
Well, these black boxes
are being able to record more and more and store more and more information. So why would they need you to install some stupid little device, And like I said, now they're pushing for the mobile app, because they're figuring, okay, even if your vehicle doesn't have all these onboard things, then you're usually going to have your cell phone with you. And so, it just install the DriveWise app instead and use that.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's why I was like, hell no. No, I'm not doing this no more, because like I said, I tried it out, and it really didn't save me much money.
Yeah, that's illegal search. That's illegal search. They're searching you illegally. And another thing, you got one of these Lakeisha James scenario. If your insurance company asks you if you've been speeding, and you say no in order to get a lower rate, then they pull up this information and say, well, you was right here in this school zone speeding.
Now they're going to say you committed fraud.
Exactly, exactly. And how much speeding is acceptable? You know what I mean? It's like they can all have their own criteria to determine what's acceptable speeding and what's not, you know, and they don't understand the circumstances. You know, it's like that scenario. You know, you get charged because of something somebody else does and you respond to it. Oh, I slammed on my brakes too soon. Or I sped up because, you know, I was trying to avoid an accident happening in front of me. You know, so I sped up to get around them. You know what I mean? Something like that. You know, you never know what kind of scenarios by which you're going to be reacting and potentially shooting yourself in the foot when it comes to insurance rates. And why the fuck is insurance legally required anyway? You know, especially with me. Like, I drive so little that chances are, you know, I have never had to have ever, not since I was 16 years old, have I had an auto insurance claim. Other than a windshield, because a fucking truck flew a big-ass rock on my windshield and I had to get the windshield replaced. That's it. You know, I've never had, but yet my fucking insurance keeps going up for reasons not me, you know.
Well, I think people should have insurance.
I mean, it's crazy.
Because, you know, I think they should have carry insurance. I mean, if you smash into me, just say by accident, you smash into me, you got enough money to fix my car? You know, so that's, you know, that's what I'm just saying. You know, I think people should carry insurance.
I don't think by law, I don't think it should be mandatory.
Why?
Nothing should be mandatory.
So if you smash into my car.
That's anti-freedom and anti-liberty.
So if you smash into my car, okay.
On my own, how many times do people have insurance and get in an accident and they're like, oh, I can afford to pay this on my own, so don't let the insurance companies know.
Well, I just ask you, if you don't have enough money.
Why should I be legally obligated to have it?
What gives you the right to smash into my car and not get paid for it then? How do I get paid?
I don't get the right. It has nothing to do with the right. I don't have the right.
What are you talking about? You committed damage on my property. Who pays?
But if you can afford it and I can afford it, if I was making enough money and I get in a car accident with you, why should I be legally obligated to spend $160 a month on insurance if I can pay for that claim myself?
I just asked you, do you have enough money to pay for it? I just asked you, do you have enough money to pay for it?
But should I be
okay, so then by so you're not letting me finish. Then by law, you should have to carry insurance.
So maybe, okay, maybe that's the compromise, an income guideline. If you earn X amount of income, then you need to pay for auto insurance because you obviously can't pay it if you do get in an accident and you don't have the money to do it yourself. But if you do earn more than a certain amount of income, then you shouldn't be obligated to because you can pay for it out of pocket. And imagine, you know, how much insurance rates would actually go down if not everybody was mandated to have car insurance, even people that can afford it. I'm a millionaire. I can fucking afford to replace your car. I can afford your hospital.
Oh, here we go.
You know, I can afford that kind of stuff. Why should I be mandated to, on top of that, have insurance if I don't want it?
Well, that's why I'm saying
anti-freedom.
If you can afford it, fine.
Where in the Constitution does it say
that we should be legally
obligated, every single one of us, if we drive a vehicle, every fucking one of us legally is mandated to have insurance?
It must be
that
time.
Where in the Constitution does it say that?
Well,
I don't know. I guess when we elect our representatives and they make laws saying that we have to pay insurance.
Here's what it says. State law does
not
say. I'm going to
bring on Cinnamon.
State law does not say you have to have insurance. State law does not say you have to have insurance. It says you have to prove financial responsibility.
Okay. Nothing wrong with that. Because if you hit my car and you can't pay for it and I take you to court and then you don't pay,
because your insurance company's going to pay. Because we know Americans are irresponsible with money. Because they would rather go out and play instead of paying for what they should be paying for. Well, look at, that's self-evident. Look at our country right now. We'd rather pay for our internet bill instead of fixing our country. We'd rather have fun than fix our country. We know that.
That financial responsibility can include a bond, a certificate of deposit submitted to the Department of Motor Vehicle, and, of course, good old insurance.
Nothing wrong with that.
I'm just gonna put this in here for Lorianne. Where I work, a lot of people when they get a new car, they get the proof of insurance for the first month and then they cancel their insurance. One of the girls that I used to work with, her cousin ended up clipping her front bumper, and it wasn't a major job to have done
the
and fixed.
Out of here.
It was $7,500, and she was working a minimum wage job, and there was no way she was going to pay it back.
Who's that talking?
Hold on a minute. Wait a minute. Uh-oh, I've been locked in.
That was Cinnamon. That was Cinnamon talking.
And then
we got to think about, too, about uninsured motorists.
Taking
that's another thing that's required in a lot of states. Is not only are we having to pay for insurance for ourselves, our own liability, but we're required, here in Oregon anyways, and in a lot of other states, we're required to also have additional protection against uninsured motorists.
Hello?
Right?
I got to go. I don't want to be on a TV show.
Okay. Look, you go ahead and go on to bed then, and I'll talk to you in a bit.
Who are you talking to, Sarge?
Who's talking?
I don't know.
I think some kind of accident happened with my phone. I don't know what happened, but I got conference here. I don't know what the deal is. Hello?
I think I butt dialed
a conference call.
Hello.
Skype caller. I'm not sure who the Skype caller is. Hey, Skype caller, I brought you on just a couple of minutes ago. Who do we got?
It's Rob. Is it Rob?
I don't know. It's not. Jeez.
I don't know.
I brought you on at the same time
as Cinnamon. So I'm trying to figure out who you are.
They didn't press one. They're not going to talk.
So that was the other trouble with the two cousins hitting each other, is neither one of them had insurance.
Great.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
She had to wait 9 months to save up the money to get her truck fixed. So
is that right or wrong, you think?
That's wrong.
I agree.
I get pissed off at them when they go, oh, the insurance is too much. I'm not paying insurance. I'm like, great. The reason I've got higher insurance is because you're a bitch and you won't cover your costs.
Yeah. You know, I think insurance is important, you know, because, you know, look, man, people are just not going to be able to afford, you know, nobody's going to be financially responsible or have enough money to cover. You know, I'm driving a $45,000 Porsche or $50,000 Porsche and somebody smashes into me. I worked my whole life to buy that car, you know, and they smash into me. My insurance has to pay for it because you don't have insurance. Bullshit, you know.
Well, right now,
yeah,
people
that's what
buy
paying for it.
And that's what's mandated. My point is, you know, I'm not arguing against should people have insurance. Yeah, if you're not financially able to cover the cost of damages and medical expenses and things like that associated with getting in an accident that's your fault, then yeah, it's a smart move to get insurance. You should probably do that. But for it to be mandated for everybody, no matter what, is a different story, and mandate uninsured. I am paying an additional fee, not beyond my own liability. I have to pay almost as much for uninsured so that my insurance company will cover it if somebody that's uninsured pissed me. That's the bullshit part right there. You know, my insurance would be half if I was only covering myself.
Lorianne.
And I've never had a fucking claim since I was 16.
Lorianne.
So why does my insurance rate keep going up? It's unfair to me.
Lorianne.
It should not be mandatory.
You
if you're financially able to cover those costs yourself, you should not be required to have insurance.
Let me tell you what I've done with my business.
Cinnamon's trying to say something for the last 10 minutes.
No, that's okay. Let Bianchi go.
I operated out of a no-fault state. And the Missouri law said that you have to have a certain amount of liability. And that liability can be achieved by three ways, a bond, insurance, or you deposit a certificate of deposit with Department of Motor Vehicle. So I carry bonds on all my vehicles. A bond covered the required responsibility, liability that the state prescribed on all my vehicles. Another thing, Missouri is a no-fault state. So if you have an insurance on your car and somebody hits you that don't have insurance, your insurance company will cover it because it's a no-fault state. Go
on.
Lorianne, what you were saying about having to pay extra for uninsured drivers, if it's not a law, because both of them got in trouble. Both of them ended up with tickets for not having insurance, and it's a high ticket. I think it was $500 for both of them each. Anyway, if it's not law and that everybody has to buy insurance, then you're still paying for the uninsured, and your insurance is still up there. Because supposedly, if you get in an accident with me and it's my fault, my insurance pays. If it's your fault, your insurance pays. And that pays for both vehicles getting paid, both vehicles being fixed. But if you hit me and you don't have any insurance, then my insurance has to pay for something that's somebody else's fault. And they don't like to do that.
Yeah, that's the other part of the equation as well is, you know, then you have to fight your insurance company to actually cover it, you know, and how much red tape is there. You know, the insurance companies that you're paying for, they don't like to pay shit out, you know. And it's ridiculous.
And in Michigan, we're also a no-fault state. So if you hit me and you didn't have insurance, my insurance will pay. They will probably try to go after you in court if it's a big money, and they will put a lien on you for the rest of your friggin' life until you pay off of it. I've seen that happen before, but that's usually when it gets up into big money.
Yeah, but then that's like double dipping. So I've been paying for uninsured motorist protection to cover my shit. And then the insurance company goes after the person that wasn't insured, and then they get awarded money. You know what I mean? It's like double dipping. Like, you're getting paid twice for the same fucking thing. I've been paid. You know what I mean?
Not exactly, because if you look at one of the cheaper cars, you would say you buy bottom line car, brand new car, you're looking at $30,000 right there, and so you hit me, and you're working a minimum wage job. My insurance company tries to take you to court. They're never gonna reap back that whole $35,000 because you turn around and declare bankruptcy, and it's done.
I'm just saying. That, like I said, I think that's a good I think what we talked about, what Joe was saying and you're saying, is there's a good compromise here. Not everybody should have to be mandated to have insurance. If you have the financial means to cover those expenses should something happen, you shouldn't have to be mandated to do it. And I shouldn't have to be mandated to pay extra to cover uninsured motorists either. You know, why is that on me? Why is it my responsibility to pay for somebody else that is at fault? They don't have the financial means to do it. So maybe there needs to be some kind of
reason why
we don't allow the insurance companies to double dip and get paid twice for the same shit.
If you have a passenger in your car, you don't have insurance. If that passenger gets killed, somebody's going to be in some deep, deep trouble.
Yeah, maybe that's the problem with no fault laws. It doesn't matter whose fault it is. You know, you could hit me and kill my friend in the passenger side, and you don't have insurance. But it's a no fault state. That's not your fault laws. Or yeah, it is somebody's fucking fault.
They don't say that it's.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes, we do know what you mean.
So, say I've got a $50,000 car. And you don't have insurance, and you hit me, and you total out your car. Say I'm driving a pickup truck, and so I've got the money to go ahead and fix my truck. Nobody has to pay for your car, no matter what, because you're uninsured. But if it's a no-fault state, then insurance will pick up medical on you. They're not going to fix your car.
Well, with Obamacare, doesn't that solve that? You know, health care is a right. It doesn't matter if it's from an accident or not and you didn't have insurance. Health care is a right, right? So now you get the health insurance companies involved. That was double dipping. You know, now it's, you know, Obamacare or it's Oregon Care because, of course, in the last election, Oregon amended our constitution wrongfully that declared health care as a right. So even that factor, if I am hit by an uninsured motorist, and even if I'm uninsured and I'm injured and that other person's injured, doesn't fucking matter. We're still going to get our health care because it's a right. It doesn't fucking matter anymore. You know what I mean? Look at us getting all into this. I don't know. I tend to be more libertarian. I tend to like mandates. You know, I don't like mandates, you know, but I am willing to compromise. I really just don't see why my insurance rate keeps going up and up and up, even though I barely drive, even though I have no claims, nothing. But my fucking insurance keeps going up every year, like $45, $50 for no goddamn reason. All because of other people, you know, not because of me. If it was my own driving, if I was a reckless driver, I could see it. It could be justified. But there's no justification for this, you know, other than a lot of people are doing fucked up shit all, you know, around my neighborhood. There's more vandalism. There's more crime, whatever the fucking case might be, that the insurance companies keep, increasing my rates for no fucking reason, through no fault of my own. That's where I think it's wrong. And then if I do have a claim, I got to battle them. They're going to want to try to deny me as much as they can and have my health insurance, you know, pay for something or my house insurance pay for something or anybody else besides them. And so it's an uphill fucking battle, you know. And who the hell sitting in the hospital that's injured after an accident, you know, is able to actually fight the insurance companies on all this shit?
Well, that's where you get all the local lawyers.
Like your homeowner's insurance. If you have a snow and you go out and you shovel your walkway, when somebody come along and step on your walkway and bust their ass, they can sue you. If you don't shovel your walkway, well, it's just an act of nature.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you'd actually have better traction if I didn't shovel my walkway. You know what I mean? You're less able to slip and fall when you're in a foot fucking of snow. But after shoveling, now you got the ice. You know, you're right. So it's like, what's the motivation for me shoveling my fucking sidewalk? When from an insurance perspective, it's actually less liability for me because, you know, you walking through a fucking foot of snow, you're not going to slip and fall as easy. I mean, I'm looking at my insurance policy right now.
I pay
$141 for uninsured motorist insurance. $141 every 6 months for uninsured motorists. Bodily injury, $25,000 per person, $50,000 per accident. Property damage, $20,000 per accident. $141 is what I'm paying every 6 months to cover somebody that isn't insured, that isn't me. Why is that my liability?
Well,
and you know damn well they're
going to
go after that person.
Getting back to your sidewalks and stuff, that's why you should not bitch at the city when the city comes and plows the road and all that snow goes on your sidewalk. Got better traction.
That's true. I mean, insurance companies are notorious for being scammers. You know, so that's another reason why, like, if insurance companies weren't so fucked up, if you didn't have to battle them, if they didn't want to automatically deny your claim the way they do, in a lot of cases, and you didn't have to battle them as much, it wouldn't be such a thing. But to mandate it, to require it of everybody, and fuel this corruption that is insurance companies by mandate is what I have a problem with.
Well, that's where their scam is the best scam in the whole fucking world, because you're required by law to buy their product.
Exactly. Yeah, we have a choice about it, but, you know, hey. Before my switchboard shuts down here in 4 minutes, do you all want to hear the latest Dr. Reality? Since it does sound like he's going to be on my show, we kind of sidebarred, and it sounds like he's going to be on my show on Sunday. He wants to get a preview and listen to one of his latest one that he did, How the Government Tricks You into Paying Income Tax You Don't Owe. This one he just did on 4-1. Should I kick this off before I lose my switchboard?
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah, like I said, I sent him my invite. He got back to me. So it sounds like he's secure for my show next Sunday. So as preparation for having Dave Champion back on my show for round four, here we go with his latest, How the Government Tricks You into Paying Income Tax You Don't Owe. Stick around, and we will come back in as we go into no man's land afterwards. So here we go.
Welcome to the show. Today, we're going to have some fun. If you've been following me for any length of time, you've undoubtedly heard me say the widespread acceptance of the government's false income tax narrative by the American people is the result of a massive 60-year government propaganda campaign. These days, more properly called disinformation. Well, I obviously can't share with you all the disinformation the government has put out over the last 60 years, I can show you the kind of disinformation they're putting out today. For those who think the government's game is strong, you'll be surprised how weak it is. The reason I say we're going to have some fun today is you're going to laugh at how transparent the government's disinformation is once you see it for what it is.
The Dr. Reality Podcast with Dave Champion.
Let's start with this. I'm the author of Income Tax Shattering the Myth, the best-selling book in America that provides mountains of incontrovertible proof Congress has never imposed the income tax on ordinary, hardworking Americans. Because I know what the law actually says, I haven't filed an income tax return or paid a penny of income tax in 30 years. I want to begin today's presentation with a quick intellectual exercise. I'm going to share several statements made by the U.S. government, and I want you to pay careful attention because when I'm done reading them, I'm going to ask your thoughts. The statements I'm going to share with you are from the government's various publications concerning what the government calls frivolous tax arguments or tax protester arguments. Are you ready? Okay, here we go. Number one, some taxpayers assert that they are not required to file federal income tax returns because the filing of a tax return is voluntary. Number two, some taxpayers attempt to reduce their federal income tax liability by filing a tax return that reports no income or no tax liability, even though they have taxable income. Number three, some individuals or groups claim that taxpayers may refuse to pay federal income taxes based on their religious or moral beliefs or an objection to the use of taxes to fund certain government programs. Number four, some individuals and groups claim that taxpayers are not required to file tax returns because of the Paperwork Reduction Act of 1980. There is a common denominator in all four statements you just heard. Can you tell me what it is? The common denominator is that each statement uses the word taxpayer. In other words, each statement applies exclusively to those who are within a class upon whom Congress has imposed the income tax. I'll read the first statement again so you can see what I'm saying. Quote, some taxpayers attempt to reduce their federal income tax liability by blah, blah, blah. All four government statements make clear what is being said applies exclusively to taxpayers. Of course, the government knows that probably 95% of Americans reading those statements subconsciously consider themselves taxpayers because they were born into the matrix created by 60 years of government disinformation and have never questioned whether the government has been telling them the truth. FYI, the government has been lying to you the whole time. The government's statements are limited to this thing called taxpayer. So what exactly is that? That question is easily answered because Congress has provided the definition of taxpayer in law. Before I read it to you, let me share with you that the federal courts have held that because Congress has defined taxpayer, the executive and judicial branches may not use any other definition. In short, there is only one definition of taxpayer that applies to the tax code. That definition is found in 26 U.S.C. 7701A, which contains the definitions applicable to the entire tax code. We know that the definitions apply to the entire tax code because at the very beginning it says, when used in this title, and Title 26, entitled Internal Revenue Code, is what people mean when they talk about the tax code. 7701A14 defines taxpayer as follows. The term taxpayer means any person subject to any internal revenue tax. Now that we know what taxpayer means, let's read the first government statement again, replacing the word taxpayer with the actual definition. That reads like this. Some people who are subject to an internal revenue tax attempt to reduce their federal income tax liability, blah, blah, blah. I hope you agree. That makes things clearer. But we can do better. The four government statements we read pertain specifically to income tax. With that in mind, let's read statement one again, narrowing it to just income tax. Some people who are subject to income tax attempt to reduce what they owe by filing blah, blah, blah. I think you'd agree. That's much better in terms of clarity. You may have noticed that it begins with some people who are subject to income tax. Does not the phrase people who are subject to income tax beg the question, which people is that? The very fact that it's phrased people who are subject to income tax tells us there are people who are not subject to income tax. Shouldn't the American people know who is and is not subject to the tax? When the government accuses someone of a crime, the accused demands to see evidence that supports the government's accusation. But when the government substitutes words like robber or rapist with the word taxpayer, Americans don't bother to demand evidence that they are a taxpayer. They don't do that because they've been born into the matrix where they've been bombarded their entire life with the false narrative that if you earn a living, you're required to give a percentage to the government. Let me say it another way. If the government wants to lock you in a cell for 3 years, you will demand the government present the evidence against you. But if the government wants to take 10, 15, or 20% of your earnings for the next 40 years, virtually no one demands evidence that they are a taxpayer. That Americans demand evidence for one situation, but not the other, speaks to how successful the government's disinformation and propaganda have been concerning the income tax. Now let's look at an example of how the government misleads you with half-truths and omissions. Here's a statement from the government. Quote, some individuals and groups maintain there is no federal statute imposing a tax on income derived from sources within the United States by citizens or residents of the United States. They argue instead that federal income taxes are excise taxes imposed only on non-resident aliens and foreign corporations for the privilege of receiving income from sources within the United States. Close quote. Those of you who have been watching or listening to my presentations for years may be thinking, wow, that's what Dave always says. The tax has been imposed on non-resident aliens and foreign corporations with U.S. source income. The government is saying that's false. Has Dave been wrong all this time? Let's check it out. If you've been paying attention to my presentations, you know that Congress has imposed the income tax on three, what the law calls, classes of persons. I'm going to list those three classes for you. Pay careful attention because they are relevant to understanding how the government does its dirt. Number one, non-resident aliens with U.S. source income. Number two, foreign corporations with U.S. source income. And number three, U.S. citizens residing abroad with foreign earned income. With those three classes fresh in your mind, let's read the significant part of the government's statement again. Quote, they argue federal income taxes are excise taxes imposed only on non-resident aliens and foreign corporations for the privilege of receiving income from sources within the United States. Did you catch the scam? In its propaganda, the government is saying that speaking about income tax being imposed on foreign persons with U.S. source income is a frivolous tax protester argument. But, and this is the critical part, they justify saying that not because the legal facts regarding foreign persons with U.S. source income are false, but solely because the person did not include the third class, U.S. citizens residing abroad with foreign earned income. Phrased another way, this government propaganda asserts that if you discuss the first two classes without mentioning the third class, you're a tax protester making a frivolous argument. It's such an absurd half-truth. I have to make sure you understand what they're asserting, which is this. If you only mention the income tax applies to non-resident aliens and foreign corporations with U.S. source income, you're a tax protester. But if you add, and citizens residing abroad with foreign earned income, then you're not a tax protester. You can't make this shit up. Here's the thing. Americans who know the three classes upon whom Congress has imposed the income tax rarely mention the third class because it's incredibly narrow and affects only a tiny percentage of Americans. I'd guess Americans who are residing abroad with foreign earned income is no more than several thousand people. When we have 100 million Americans filing 1040s every year, the vast majority of whom having in law zero income tax liability, why would anybody be talking about a group of several thousand people who are legitimately required to file and pay? That's just nuts. But of course, the government isn't trying to be logical or rational. It's trying to scare people by telling half-truths. It is their intention to trick you. The average American doesn't have any understanding of income tax law, so they easily fall prey to the government's propaganda, its disinformation. And to be clear, these kinds of half-truths are intended to compel obedience to a lie by making Americans fearful. Imagine a government that intentionally sets out to manipulate its citizens into adhering to a lie by telling them falsehoods to create fear. At the beginning of Income Tax Shattering the Myths, there is a 3-page section entitled, How to Read This Book. In that section, I say the following. Do not immediately jump on the IRS's website the first time you think you found something the IRS might disagree with. I encourage you to do that, just not right away. There is an entire chapter of this book in which we explore the things the IRS has to say, in their own words, about numerous issues, including the things the IRS has to say about those wacky tax protesters. After you've completed Chapter 10, feel free to roam the IRS's website to your heart's content. Until we've covered the material, you're all too likely to fall prey to the government's intentional trickery. The IRS has been playing this game a long time. They are experts at deceit. Let me show you, in Chapter 10, exactly how they pull their con job. After that, you be the judge. I share that to make the point that because the IRS sets out to trick the American people, and it's pretty damn good at it, in Income Tax Shattering the Myths, I dedicate an entire chapter to understanding how they trick you so that once you see how they run their scam, you become immune to it. If you care that the government is lying to the American people and stealing from them by spreading this kind of disinformation, I hope you'll share this video. The big question is, do you care? I was recently speaking with a longtime friend who is one of the most astute men I know concerning human nature. I'm about to begin the crowdfunding process for the documentary I'll be making about the government's income tax scam. I asked him what I might say about the venture that would get ordinary Americans who don't know the truth of the income tax or might be skeptical about it to contribute to the making of the documentary. He is an incredibly intelligent, intuitive, and creative man I've known for 35 years, so his answer shocked me. He said he had no idea what to say because over the last several years, he has become uncertain whether Americans any longer care about truth. The crowdfunding hasn't begun yet, so I'm not going to ask for your help with that today. I am going to suggest that if the truth still matters to you, you pick up a copy of Income Tax Shattering the Myths, read it, and spread the word that the only thing preventing the income tax scam from ending is the ignorance of the American people. If the American people got informed, the income tax would cease to exist. Don't get me wrong, it will still be on the books, but if Americans understood it only applies to non-resident aliens and foreign corporations with U.S. source income, as well as U.S. citizens residing abroad with foreign earned income, the number of people filing and paying would crash from 100 million to perhaps a couple hundred thousand who pay U.S. source income to foreign persons and are required by law to act as a withholding agent. Did you notice just now I mentioned all three classes? Had I failed to mention it, I would have been a tax protester. Can you imagine the number of filers dropping from 100 million to a couple of 100,000? Do you know what that's called? It's called freedom, personal liberty. In this time of political angst everywhere we look, the great thing about what I'm advocating is that all those 100 million people need to do is obey the law. Learn it and obey it. It's just that simple, which is why I haven't filed or paid in 30 years. You can get Income Tax Shattering the Myths by going to